We are meeting this morning to deal with the annual report and contents thereof of the Department of Correctional Services. Minister, welcome. Deputy Minister Kosesef, welcome. And the officials led by the Commissioner, the head of the SIU and his delegation, the Treasury. I think Treasury has arrived. Yes, Treasury is the first ones of the bench. Welcome. And the Auditor General. I'm going to quickly and very speedily introduce the members. And then when we start, Minister, your delegation will request those who are here to introduce themselves. I'm going to start at the back. That is Honorable Mente. Red. Next to her is the Honorable Somio, and the white shirt, who is also the chairperson of the Standing Committee on the Auditor General, but a member of this committee. And the Honorable Zibula at the back. In front is Honorable Van Minen. Next to her is the Honorable Liz, aka Mazambane. And then further down there is the Honorable Hadebe with an H, and the gentleman who is about to take his seat is the Honorable Dex, who is also a whip on this committee. I am Kulego Lengwa, I chair the committee. Minister and Commissioner, as I've indicated, you have received your annual report. The issues which arose out of that annual report, which have necessitated this meeting today, particularly that you received a qualified audit opinion for the year 18-19, which of course was the same for 17-18, 16-17. And the 3 years I list were a regression from 2015-16, where you received an unqualified audit opinion, which was an improvement from 2014-15. That regression, amongst other things, is of concern to the committee, and your ability to come out of such an audit opinion is key amongst the reasons why we are here this morning. So what we have done is that we have split up the can I get the schedule please of the textbook? That's right, thank you. So we have split up today's hearing into four parts. We're going to start with irregular expenditure, and then we will move to commitments, and then deal with fruitless and wasteful expenditure and deviations. So we'll be dealing with the 3.3 million rand irregular expenditure, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 80 million rand, and the deviations of 409 million rand. Individual members have been allocated particular sections to each of these, and they will be given the time to interact. One question, one response. So, Commissioner, you will field the questions, and where you deem necessary, you will defer to any of your team members. We have got the head of the SIU here at our invitation, because there are cases which, or proclamations which, investigations which should be finalized, some in the process. As and when it's necessary, colleagues, the SIU will answer questions around matters, so they are not in the hot seat per se, but they are here to enable our process to make sure that we receive the response. As I've indicated, Treasury is key, particularly when it comes to deviation, and of course the AG is here as well. Right. Are there any apologies, Ben, Dombi? None? Right. And I've received the Honorable Dolashi. All right. The Minister indicated through correspondence yesterday and on the phone that he would like to be excused at 10:30 because there is a Cabinet Committee who is presenting in the event that he is done there, he will come back. So I acceded to that, and so that is why he's here now. But in the main, we are wanting to deal with the accounting of him. So, colleagues, I think I have put into context why we are here. I would like at this point in time to hand over to you, Minister, if there are any introductory remarks that you want to make, and your delegation to introduce themselves. And then Honorable Liz, you will be first off the bat with irregular expenditure. Dombi, come and see me. Please see me, Ben. All right. Honorable Dex, then we'll start with you once we sort out this. And then that much. Honorable Zibola, we'll start with you, and Ben and Tombi, please come and see me to explain what is going on here. Honorable Minister, over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity. As you have said, that we need to firstly introduce ourselves from our delegation from the department. Myself, I'm the Minister of Correctional Service, Justice and Correctional Service. Ronald de la Mola.
Morning, Chairperson. My name is Patrick Loromis. I'm the Deputy Minister of Justice and Correctional Service.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'm Arthur Fraser, National Commissioner, Correctional Services.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. I'm Nick Ligege, CFO.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Minister and Deputy, and Honorable Members. My name is Andy Mutivi. I'm the head of Special Investigating Unit. Thank you.
Chairperson, good morning. Chairperson, Minister and Deputy Minister and colleagues, my name is Jane Masite. I'm the Chairperson of the Audit Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that will be enough introduction. In case the officials from behind us may have to say something, they will introduce themselves as and when they do so. Thank you for the opportunity to come here. We view this as part of our responsibility as government to account to this committee and also to the nation, but also to speak to the various issues that the committee will have picked up from the annual report, which was presented to the House. On the various issues that have been raised also by the Auditor General and the various SIU proclamations that are ongoing with regard to the department. We have observed the difficulties of the department, particularly in terms of compliance with the governance prescripts, the PFMA, the supply chain prescripts, and the various processes that must enable us compliance. Hence, today, Chairperson, we now have the Chairperson of the Audit and Risk Committee, which we believe will help us to be able to be on our toes, including with our internal audit processes. We have also been very clear to the department, ourselves as the executive authority, in terms of consequence management, where we have struggled to comply with certain prescripts and of governance. And I think the officials, as they engage with you, they will be able to outline the details of what has been done in regard to consequence management. And we have also been very clear with the implementation of the various SIU proclamations and also the recommendations that are before the department, that where investigations are either provisional or they've been completed, that the recommendations has to be implemented without blinking. Unfortunately, this sometimes becomes a very long, arduous process, fraught with a lot of litigation and various platforms, which I think will become apparent as the department present, and with the various issues of non-compliance, we have also engaged at various levels within ourselves to ensure that we are able to respond adequately to these issues. One of the issues that have caused is failure to comply with various prescripts, lack of understanding, including corruption and personal interest, but also some other issues related to lack of capacity, related to to the high vacancy rate that we are grappling with and which we are responding to as a department. And the strat plan going forward for the next 5 years include us responding to addressing the issues of the vacancy rate. So, Chair, I don't want to be long. I think I need to give yourself as the committee a chance to engage and interrogate properly the annual report. Mine was just to open and state that we view this as an opportunity of us to be corrected and to see how we can build a way forward from now henceforth. Thank you.
Minister, thank you very much. I'm going to try and manage this situation which is before us. So maybe what we'll do, Commissioner, we'll start with irregular expenditure. You will take us through the set of circumstances which led to that irregular expenditure. And then when that is done, then members will be able to then field questions on that basis. So can we start there?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to indicate maybe at the onset, Chair, that we have a capacity that investigates both irregular and fruitless expenditure. And we as a department had, because of capacity constraints, had decided to prioritize the area of irregular expenditure. So when we look at the issue of irregular expenditure, we had 875 cases, of which we investigated 750, which equates to 86%, Chair. When we look at the irregular expenditure matters, we've actually broken it down. When we look at head office, we've been able to identify that we had identified 127 cases at head office, which quantified 3 billion, just about 3 billion rand. We then broke it down to the different regions, so in total it came to the 875. Of the total number of cases, we finalized 580 of those cases. And those cases that we have finalized had gone through the entire process of consequent management. There's cases that are in progress, Chair, and these cases are cases that has been investigated but are still being referred for disciplinary processes, blacklisting, and consequent management. So the whole disciplinary process there, we have 170 of those cases where it's finalized but not completed. Of the total of 875, there are 125 cases that we have been unable to deal with at this point, Chairperson. If I can just go further on the matter of the the irregular expenditure. Most probably important to note, Chairperson, that three of the matters are matters of prior year, and they total 80% of the irregular expenditure. And if we look at the quantums, it's 80% of that, Chair. So for the year under review, the department had a regular expenditure of 159 million. That quantifies about 4.7% of the total percentage. But if we look at, besides the irregular expenditure, some of the irregular expenditure that came from a prior year that did not fall within the category of matters that is either with the SIU or with National Treasury for condonement. One of those matters we had referred to the SIU, and the SIU has finalized or has referred the outcomes of the findings to ourselves. Chair, on the issue of irregular expenditure, I just spoke there to the quantums. When we look at the root causes, the Minister has touched on that. One of the issues relates to a lack of understanding of the prescripts. Here, specifically the law circulars that we get from Treasury and the like. But the challenge here, Chair, is because at the coalface, at our management areas, we have officials that are multitask, so they are not necessarily professionals in the area of supply chain and got upskilled to do that work. So we are challenged in that area. What we have done as a department is that our supply chain management has prepared a procurement manual to prevent the issue of irregular expenditure and to ensure that we align ourselves to National Treasury prescripts. This manual had been circulated in March this year. Also with regard to supply chain, we've also developed a program where we've gone to our six regions and we'd assisted in training the members with regard to best practice in procurement administration. This is yielding results, Chairperson. Further to that, we have also adopted an approach where we've got head office to deal with the due diligence process, whereby head office look at tenders that are administrated at the regional offices, and prior to finalization of the awards, head office will do the due diligence. And then with support from our audit committee, Chairperson, we have adopted an approach where bids with a value of greater than 20 million, we have requested that the internal audit actually do a due diligence on those processes to ensure that there's greater accountability. What we can also indicate, Chair, is that the department is also utilizing the newly established National Treasury Central Suppliers Database as a control measure to detect officials that are conducting business with the state and the department. In addition to the above, the procurement unit has reviewed the utilization and is utilizing the procurement checklist for transactions from the value of 1 rand to 30,000. And this has been monitored on an ongoing basis so that we are able to detect and prevent irregular expenditure. We are also getting quotations that are being obtained from the Central Suppliers Database, And we are also utilizing the public service verification service system from DPSA to determine whether any of our officials in the department is conducting business. However, we are challenged, your chair and members, because that system only allows us to see officials that work at national and provincial government. So we're unable to have sight similar to the AG, where we're able to see people operating or working in all entities of the state. The issue of restricted prior to us awarding bids, we get our supply chain management to verify bidding information and to ensure that no restricted bidders or tender defaulters that is located on the National Treasury website are allowed, and our bid evaluation committee members are also obligated to sign verification certificates that they had confirmed this information. Chair, that just an indication of root causes and some of the mechanisms we had put in place.
All right.
To deal with the regular expenses.
All right. Commissioner, you say that you have spoke about capacity and then upskilling of people to supply chain, if I heard you correctly. Is that the case?
Correct.
Right. Now, you, of course, are aware of Cabinet Resolution of 2014 for the vetting of people in supply chain. Has that been done for those individuals? And how many are we speaking about, so that we can drill into that?
Chair, would you allow me just to get information and then I'll be able to respond to you on that.
Can that be supplied so long? Commissioner, on your schedule of, and then Honorable Hatte and Honorable Mente, on your schedule of the irregular expenditure, one thing struck my eye. You start on page 6 of 32, that big bundle on A3, colleagues have it, that your schedule of irregular expenditure. And I think I dare say I start on page 6 of that. Yeah, this is a this schedule here, can that be taken? Pardon? Oh, you've got the smaller version. My eyes, I was accommodated because of the challenge of sight. Right. It speaks to its cases, its new cases for 2013-2014. Top left-hand corner, right? It's item 138 if the pages are different. This is KwaZulu-Natal. And just check. Well, I'll take colleagues through it. Here's the pattern I want to draw. Three quotations not invited. And you move from item 128, 130, 132, 133, like the whole list. Three quotations not invited, right? When you go to the official, it's a certain Morgan Governor, right, who's head of maintenance. But here's my concern, Commissioner. In the column referring to general comments, it says, no official could be disciplined due to time frames. And then you go down that entire list. So it begs the question of the effectiveness and efficiency, one of the investigations and the disciplinary processes which you are engaging in, that you spoke about.
this is but one example. I mean, we can count. This Morgan Govind appears on that entire page. You turn the page, the same applies. That's page. You turn the third to the third page, the same applies. Fourth page, the same applies. Right up until you get to the fifth page. Same applies. And you turn the page again. I'm on page 11 now from page 6. I'm sure you are picking up the pattern I'm speaking about, Commissioner. And your general comments say that no disciplinary, no official could be disciplined due to time limits. So what does that say about your consequence management? This is just but one individual that I'm referring to over here. So that's what I want to talk about. If we can get a response to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to, before, I just want to check the time. Chairperson, the capacity that was set up to deal with these investigations, I think was set up in 2015. And I've been advised that there was a huge backlog. So what you may find here is that we were caught in the issue of prescription on this matter.
Tell you why I ask. This is not the first engagement with correctional services, and some of the officials here have been part of this process. So if we speak about capacity and a backlog, I wouldn't call it a backlog, I would call it an action. That's what it is, because the issues were raised, and obviously no action was taken. All these historic matters. So then there's the question, where's the senior management, the top management, who should have done these things that did not do them? What action was taken against them? Has that investigation been done? And then I'll come to you in a minute. I note your hand. I was very deliberate in raising it.
Thank you, Chair. What we had done last year is that we had applied for a proclamation in one specific area where we were challenged, Chair, to assist in dealing with the matters. So we had done that. But the issue of account, the holding senior management accountable, beyond that, I won't be able to reflect on that now, on this instance, Chairperson.
I would imagine that you should, Commissioner, because if you're inheriting all this irregular expenditure and no action has been taken, my first point of call would be, why wasn't it done? And then follow up on the one that was supposed to do something about it. Because then I can ask, where is this Morgan Govinda now? Are they still part of the establishment?
Okay, I'll just have to hear from some of my colleagues.
But he's head of maintenance, I think, in KwaZulu-Natal.
Oh,
yes. He's got misdemeanors which are over 5 pages. He just simply does not like the three quotation system, he or she. And he gets off scot-free because the one who was supposed to do something didn't do anything. So where is this official?
And I ask CFO,
sure.
Maybe as motive.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to explain the part of KwaZulu-Natal. In relation to what leads to the not requesting three quotations, is because there are instances where, in most instances, our facilities have got challenges in terms of maintenance.
The matter has been flagged as a regular expenditure. The official cited is Morgan Cavender. He did not get three quotes. And it says you don't cite that then your reasons. You cite that your time frame expired. The question is, where is this official? Now, because we will drill into the nitty-gritties of one by one of these things at a later stage, let's establish the principle. Is it still part of the establishment?
Part of the establishment.
Right. Now, doesn't that then say indicate anything about things that should have been done? Because therefore, when you now want to justify, you nullify all of this that's before us. You say, well, sometimes you see that's the issue. That's the gray area. This official commissioner sits here. I've counted six pages. Of the same thing over and over and over again, and no action has been taken. So it says, what is the effectiveness and efficiency of your consequence management? Because unless therefore you're wanting to say then that those are things which should be have been deviations or expansions, but for the purposes of them being cited here, for us, something is fundamentally wrong.
Thank you, Chair. There was a final written warning issued to Mr. Govender and Zamin in relation to the cases of utilizing one quotations for maintenance purposes.
For all of this, I certainly do not buy that unless I see it in writing. Because it's now a very convenient cop-out. You said that it had expired. How did you issue something when your time frames had expired? On what basis did you do that? Yeah, how, on what basis did you then issue that final warning? If, like, you explained your comment here, colleagues, I'm coming to, I'm just trying to establish the parameter. No official could be disciplined due to time frames. How lawful is this, right, Commissioner?
No. Thank you, Chair. I'd want to provide the portfolio of evidence on this that was presented, Chair. What I know about this document that was provided, there are challenges in how we've captured some of the information and provided it to the committee. So there is a challenge on that, but I'm not relating to the specific issue.
No, but I am relating. I'm very specific, Commissioner. Because if you are saying there are challenges, then are you withdrawing this document? What's its status? You provided it. What's its status? Because I'm saying the narrative there says no, as Honorable Liz points out, no official could be disciplined due to time frames, as I've been reading, and page by page the same applies. So I then ask, who is the official? He's still part of the establishment. The CFO tries to venture down wanting to talk about the circumstances, but it's irregular, that's the bottom line. And then now we're told that a final warning was issued. The question becomes, on what basis, on what process did that written warning arise when here you are saying no official could be disciplined? And you spoke about prescription, Commissioner. Okay? And then Honorable Van Minden, we would like to add a rider. and then Honorable, all right, I'll open it up to, because I think let's tie this down because I think it spells out succinctly. That's what, when I received this, that's what popped in my mind, and that's why I'm using it as a basis. Right, Honorable Van Minen, Honorable Somio, Honorable Mente, we'll take those three hands just on this matter. Right.
Thank you very much. What I want to get to is the issue of prescription. Legally, prescription is a defense. It is something that is raised as a defense. And the three-year prescription applies to civil litigation with debt collection. So I'd be very interested in how that is being imported into the issue of misconduct potentially. But the simple fact that it isn't for somebody to decide not to follow up because prescription has already kicked in. Prescription is specifically raised as a defense. So I don't really see how it's applicable here unless the person was held accountable and used prescription as a defense.
Honorable Somio, and then Honorable Mente, and then we'll get responses.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. The indication is as well based on the fact that I think the Commissioner, looking into your report, there is an indication here of a number of cases. Let's take example as the chair is trying to pursue the matter. A number of cases are flowing from the head office up to the last province in relation to regular expenditure. And if you look into the total number of cases that have been finalized, you'd find out that that number varies, and as it varies, there are some provinces where you would find out that it's either 0, 1, and it goes on 25, and so forth, the total number of finalized cases, and you have the internal capacity which ought to deal with these matters of investigation, and that internal capacity which has been established in the department is supposed to pull through those matters. So if you have matters that some might prescribe, what does it say about such a capacity that you have brought in, that investigative capacity internally, which ought to empower the department to deal with these kind of cases, let alone the example that has been highlighted, but you look into the overall manner of attending to these kinds of cases. Do you want to say to us you are happy with that level of capacity? If you are happy, why these kinds of examples? If you are not happy, what is it that you are doing to ensure that you arrive at a level where that capacity would be the capacity that the department is somewhat happy about? The chair is highlighting just a single example. There might be examples where in your system would allow a person to leave, you see, just on the verge of finalization of investigation or DCs, or where an individual would be brought in, probably even back after the finalization of such processes. So in all manner of things, the indicative laxity of your systems in arriving at a scenario which is going to guarantee the fact that the monies that are somewhat assigned to your department are monies which are accounted for quite appropriately. How can we be somewhat get a guarantee that these things are receiving your attention?
All right. Honorable Mente, and then we'll come back to questions and then colleagues will follow up. Honorable Mentor.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, I want to go back firstly to the question which was inadequately answered of the vetting. Part of the reasons why you would have occurrences of the same name in misconduct of the same nature is due to the fact that you are dealing with a person who has no interest of what you're doing. And if then that person is not registered as a corrupt individual, they are going to continue doing the same thing. Therefore, I'm still going to pose the same question firstly. These particular individuals that appear under irregular expenditure, especially as it is explained on the note 26 of your annual report, not only on the governor, but on all other names that appear on that schedule in terms of the irregular expenditure. They did not follow the process of bidding. Some of them are on SIU. SIU will give us the process and the status. They did not comply with the CETA X. There's one who rented office without a lease. You pay state money, there's no lease. There's one where the quotations were not done. And there's others, contract variation in excess of 20%, which is a serious breach of treasury rules. Were all these individuals vetted? And what were the results of their vetting status?
Tie down on those. I think when we'll come back to you, so we don't lose them. I think let's start with the issue of prescription, the laxity of the processes. The commissioner was still awaiting information on vetting, as you've written. Then you'll come in. Let's tie down on this. You know why, commissioner, this matter, this governor issue raises flags? It was in 2017, if I'm not mistaken, in the Fifth Parliament, when the same matter was raised. I'm surprised that the answers are still as shady as they were then today. There's no clarity in terms of what it was raised very, very sharply, colleagues, in the Fifth Parliament. That's why it popped up in my eye. So let's deal with those three sets of issues, and then Honorable Mendy will come back and do a follow-up, and Honorable, your follow-ups, and Honorable Hadem. And then we tie it down on the issue. Mazamban, you've got a hand? Okay, let's finish this.
Chairman, just on process, we're jumping around a bit from issue to
issue.
Yeah,
that's why I'm bringing it back now.
So, you know, if we're going to home in on this issue, then I'm leaving it to the rest to do.
Yeah. No, we are on the irregular expenditure, and we are dealing with these issues, but I just want us to tie it down on the governor matter, and then the issues that have been raised by the three colleagues, and then we deal with the irregular and finish. Right, Commissioner?
Thank you, Chairperson. I was just looking at the spreadsheet that we have, Chairperson. That's why I was raising the issue. When we look at our general comments, there has been a challenge. So I just want to put that. If we look at the column, when we relate to governor, it reflects that the matter was referred. So some of the matters around governor, if you look at the excess, but if you just look at the excess besides that one, there's a number of instances where the matter has been referred for disciplinary. So I need to be able to interrogate further why we've captured the others in that manner. And then there is an instance where it's reflected on page 9.
No, Commissioner, you see, I'll, you see that the column of referred is column number 3 from the right.
Yes, Chair.
Now there is we can count together if you so wish. I don't have a problem with that. You look the let's take page 6. The entire page 6 in reference to Govender has got 1, 2, 3, 4 referrals. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15 other cases about Govender have not. So I'm just saying to you, referral on a person who's got, who appears on almost 5, 6 pages of your of this schedule of 32 pages. I think that let's have that appreciation. You've not done anything about it. 2017, you raised the same matter. It's now 2019. You've not done anything about it. And that is why you are unable to explain the so-called final written warning. Because there's no clarity on the outcome. At every instance, it says that you are unable to take disciplinary action because time, due to time frames, and the person still remains part of the establishment. And that's why I'm saying to you, I take the written warning with a pinch of salt. It's a convenient cop out. On what basis do you have it? On which? Maybe let me put it this way: which case was Govender charged for? Can I get my 100 rand, please, for that phone? Thanks. On which case was Govender charged? That out of all of these, but I'm gonna pick other examples just now, if I must, and we'll probably run into the same kind of.
Right, Chairman, I suppose a comment, but. We have one of the biggest delegations ever seen come to a committee, and yet we're floundering with answers to pretty straightforward questions. We've got officials sitting in two rows here, and we're not getting answers.
What was Govender charged for? That doesn't appear unless Commissioner, this is your document, not mine. I received this from you. The committee received it from you. And I read it, and Govender popped up. Nayagayet, who governed, who Pelezelwa, Abba, and Baudlamin. Gayet, Baudlamin. So, right, CFO?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. On page 9, there's an item 241. It's
241, right, there you go.
Line 241, that's the case similar to the others on plumbing miscellaneous services where Dlamini, Kali and Govender were charged and given final written warning.
Right, now, out of all those things there,
yes,
you refer us to one and he's still there. I just want to understand what's so special about this Govender and Dlamini character that they seem untouchable. I don't understand. Honestly speaking, and I think the point raised, and because what is clear here is an establishment which is at peace with this and accept it as a norm. That's what it is.
Chairperson, just ask the head of inspector. This is these investigations just to respond.
All right, that's fine.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were various cases that are relating to Govender from KZN. The first 55 transactions that we have investigated, we refer them to code enforcement where disciplinary actions were taken against Mr. Kali and Mr. Govender. That's when now they have issued final written warnings. And then the unit then later on investigated additional 101 or 5 cases. I don't have the exact total, but it's over 100 transactions relating to the same transgressions. And those cases were then closed on the basis that the very same, the nature of the cases were the same, and the officials were already disciplined, given final written warnings.
No. So if you see, you're throwing a spanner in the works. These 100 cases, you have said here, that's where I want to go to. On what basis did you charge them and discipline them? Because you have said, Honorable Minister raised the question on prescription, but I just want to follow your logic. Because quite frankly, it's clear that the consequence management is in 6s and 7s. Were they charged for 100 cases and found guilty on one? Because this is one, unless you are saying item 241 has got 100 transactions. It's on page 9, as the CFO has brought our attention. So the PFMA does not apply to this government. Right. Whilst we wait, await that commissioner, let's deal with the issue of vetting that I had raised and Honourable Mente has raised. The people whom you have upskilled and upscaled, maybe that's one part, but generally and specifically, your SCM practitioners, have they been vetted?
Chairperson, I don't have that stat with me, but in terms of cabinet decisions, supply chain, and SMS members.
Right. Where's HR?
HR.
Right, HR should have that information.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. I'm the head of HR, but the function in our department lies with security standards.
What is security standards?
The DC executive management.
Guys?
Chairperson, one of the sorry that I'm coming, I'll have to provide the detail, but where we are challenged is where we have senior management and supply chain officials, details provided we've got a vetting fieldwork unit. They have submitted their documentation.
That's what we want, Commissioner.
They've submitted their documentation, and the documentation is then forwarded to SSA. So I need to provide the detail, if I could submit the detail after this, just on which officials have received the clearances.
Let me simplify it this way. If you've got 100 supply chain practitioners, you must tell us that 20 have been vetted, 30 are in the process, and 50 have refused. That's what we want. So we want to gauge the extent to which is it happening or not. You've been able to give us other stats here, so let's deal with that. Ukona, Ustate, the two states, security standards, are they here?
Security standards are not here, but they'll have the stats. I will try and get it, because we had dealt with this. We'd also got the further instruction from the minister to ensure that our senior management, supply chain, and our investigative units be vetted. So we had collected that information. we have submitted. It's just the details that I don't have
that,
with me.
That explanation doesn't suffice, but let me give honorable list and then...
Mr. Chairman, just a simple general reply. Have all the relevant officials been instructed to supply the required information for an application for vetting to be done? Yes or no? Then have they supplied it?
They
are there any that have not?
There are few that have not.
Okay. Who are those few? But that is where then you begin to zone in on where Ukanga is. So who are those few? I'm sure you'd want to, you'd have that. I'd be interested if this committee, we were asked to vet, and Honorable Lee says no, I would know which is Honorable Lee was refusing. Go by, it's a few. So who are those? I think, Commissioner, what you see here, we're not dealing with the policy matters of the Portfolio Committee. We're dealing with compliance here and the issues, in our view, in our perspective, are the root cause for these shortcomings, these collapses, and these lapses which have given you the kind of audit opinion that you have. Right, Honorable Mente? So I'm hoping that my information is being finalized that side.
Chair, also they must add from what level are they vetting?
All right.
Because there are people in the correctional services in all outlets that are making decisions and yet are not regarded as management.
All right.
So from what level are you vetting?
All right, we would want that. All right. Colleagues, let us zoom into... Is the information here, right? But I would also imagine that CFO, you would know the people in your space, because you know at ESCOM we had a similar situation. 121 must be vetted. The 100 is telling us to go and jump off the cliff. They were very specific. Who are these people? Where are these people? How many of them in correctional services are not complying? And the question becomes: are they still at work? I don't understand how, if you don't comply with the directive, you still, it's business as usual. It just doesn't add up. And I hope that those who will be answering later have understood the angle on which we are coming from, so you do not have these delays of consulting. This is your information, it's not ours.
We will just wait for us, the detail.
All right, colleagues, let us now just deal with the issues of irregular expenditure. All right, I will start with the Honorable Hadebe. Honourable Minister, thank you very much. Your apology had been noted. The Deputy Minister is... you are released on parole, Deputy Minister. I think about Bafai Klein, which is our response. Can we flag it for these outstanding responses? Okay, I noted that. Ngiyabona now. Right, Honorable Hadebe.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the report before us. Honorable Chair, I think part of the reason why the department got a qualified audit opinion, according to the AG, is that the department did not have an adequate system for identifying all irregular expenditure. Therefore, we could not confirm the completeness of the regular expenditure disclosed, resulting in your qualification, Commissioner. That's what the Auditor General is saying. And the report before us does not seem to have dealt with what the Auditor General has indicated as the remedial action. because the figures presented to us are the same figures that the Auditor General gave us in the audit opinion. And what the Auditor General recommended was that the department should revisit and populate and identify a transaction which non-compliance with law has occurred. So meaning you ought to have identified all, but your report is still giving us what the Auditor General gave us. Hence, you are faced with the situation of qualified audit opinion. So I'd like to know, how far are you with the recommendation from the Auditor General? Because if you are unable and you do not have systems in place to identify irregular expenditure, the basic principle of project management is that if you cannot measure it, you cannot manage it. So my first question, how far are you with the implementation of the recommendation of Auditor General?
Right.
Auditor General gave you a clear instruction that you need to identify all transactions that were non-compliant with the law. You are coming to us with the same number of transactions that you presented to Auditor General. That seeks to suggest we have not moved from the recommendation. We are close to festive season, it's December. Is there any progress in that regard? That's the first question, Chair.
Yeah, we're going to do one question, one response now. We have cleared the woods. The context has been set.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's true that we have incompleteness in terms of irregular expenditure. And those cases are cases where we did not have contracts in place for procurement of frequent supplies such as food items.
My apology. The Auditor General says all transactions should be identified and disclosed and as irregular expenditure. Have you done that to date? I'm not talking about implementing disciplinary cases. Have you identified the entire irregular expenditure within your department and have you disclosed them as such?
Yes, we have. After the audit was completed, with that finding, we put an action plan in place to revisit the entire population of prior periods with a view that by the end of this financial year, we would restate our figures and disclose the entire population in terms of irregular expenditure. And in the main, those are the ones that I'm referring to where there was splitting of cases because of absence of contracts to procure such services.
Right, maybe just on that, the absence of contracts. So you have identified where there was no contract, but where you're receiving services. Right? Why were there no contracts?
Thank you, Chair. There is a time when we were facing challenges with irregular expenditure, where the regions were doing procurement, and those procurements would be found to be irregular. So we implemented the due diligence process where before the award we requested them to bring the documents and we go and review the process. The first time around we found in certain instances that the process was also flawed and we cancelled those tenders. But by cancelling those tenders it meant that the existing contracts then came to an end and they had to buy through quotations. Now if you look at the volume or the volume and the value, it then requires those services to be bought through contracts which are fixed term. Now when the AG looks at it, they say you are splitting cases of value greater than 500,000 that ought to be a contract, and they regard that procurement process of quotation as irregular.
So which one you speak about flaws, where were those flaws in the contract process?
In the procurement process.
Yes. Well, in the contract, you said you found them to have been flawed.
Yes. Some of the flaws were issues around application of the preferential point system. Some were administrative processes where we would find that the opening of the tenders was not done with witnesses, those type of things.
All right.
So we were saying there is flaws in this process which may lead to irregularity.
All right. Now, when I'm coming to you, Honorable Hatta, so those flaws, and so you've corrected that now?
Yes.
Right. In your correction, what consequence management followed? Because I would imagine that correction would have included consequence management. Can you speak to that?
There is no, in the sense that where we found that, because there was no award, we prevented awarding a contract, so we stopped the process, and we oversaw the second round of process.
No.
But there was no.
No, CFO. It's good that you prevented it, but it does not discount the action.
If
you are citing, for example, that tender documents were opened without witnesses. I would imagine that anybody in the supply chain sector would know that they're not supposed to do that. Why would they? And so what consequences followed? It's like if you are watching the impeachment processes in the U.S., there was no quid pro quo. It was an attempted bribe, all sorts of spin. Just because the final destination was not arrived at does not mean that the intent was not there and that certain things fell off the wayside, and amongst them is what you have cited. You prevented something that was flawed, wrong, and irregular. That prevention is welcome, but where's the consequences on those that, had you not caught them, would have gone the whole nine yards with their misdemeanors? I would like a response to that. Otherwise, then the correcting of, as far as we are concerned here, it's very minimal action. It's a very minimalistic intervention. It spoils the good work that you did. So there was no consequences. So the very same people who have opened tender documents remain in that space and remain a threat to the state, because we have now identified that they are prone to ugang. And there was no consequences. I raise this because Honorable Somi has been very clear about the necessity of consequence management. Right, Honorable Hateva?
Thanks, Chair. Let me be clear and categorically here that if we as senior administrators and officials tolerate non-compliance, the attitude and the mindset from those who are charged to implement and enforce compliance, the attitude and mindset won't change. So it should start from the top senior official to be seen not to be tolerant to non-compliance. Chair, the report before us, I think on page 4 and page 8, it gives an indication that is worrisome to say cases finalized. It refers to cases concluded either through condonation, regularization, removal from the register. So meaning, out of these 875 cases and the 580 cases that we have finalized, you are saying to us, those that have been finalized, it's either they are condoned, regularized, or removed from the register. Now listen to what section 48 of the Irregular Expenditure Framework states. It says, if investigation confirms that irregular expenditure is related to fraudulent corruption and criminal act, the accounting officer must, within 7 days, ensure that criminal charges are laid with SEPs. Now, the question is, out of all these cases that have been finalized, how many cases have been opened with SEPs? And how much money has been recovered from officials who are implicated in this irregular expenditure? Because I do not want to accept what is stated here, that you have condoned and regularized some of these cases. Unless you are saying to us, none of these cases amount to corruption and fraudulent activities. Is that what is stated here in front of us?
focus on matters referred to investigations arising from that question. What's with the SEPs? What's with the SIU? What's where?
With specific reference to those that have been finalized.
Of the finalized cases on irregular that we refer to here, there is none where there is referral in terms of criminal charges.
Why not?
Are you saying, in essence, as per Section 48 of Irregular Expenditure Framework, there are no cases that you regard as fraudulent, corruption, and of criminal in nature? Hence, you have condoned all of them. Cases that are dating back from 2011, 780 of those cases.
Maybe let me add a rider to that. Have you referred any cases to law enforcement agencies?
Chairperson, from the 580 cases that we have investigated and finalized, there were none that we have found to have fraudulent activities, but we have not referred any.
Would those include those which are there's non-compliance with the CETA Act? Mike? There you go.
CETA Acts are still under investigations, and some of them are under litigation. I was just referring to the ones that we have investigated and finalized in internally.
So out of 580, none. I'm not sure whether I'm gobsmacked or I'm
checked. Yeah, 3.3 billion of irregular expenditure. Close to 80%, there is no... I'm not sure. I correct me if I'm wrong. Something does not add up here. It can be. Hence my earlier statement. If we tolerate non-compliance, the attitude and mindset won't change. It can't be possible. Convince me otherwise, colleagues.
Can I ask this question? I think this... I'm sorry, colleagues. I'm trying very hard to be untriggered by this. Now, can I go back to... I want to cite Gomet, Govinda and Dlamini as an example. Okay, wait. Here's the issue. But some of these non-compliance with three quotations, did it arise in your investigations that maybe one contractor was the point of call all the time? Just looking at the Govinda and Dlamini one. Who was this good friend of theirs that they would not subject to a three quotation? Because, let me just end there. It was a common denominator contractor here.
In some instances, Chairperson,
yes. Right, now, did not then trigger to you that this could have been a syndicate, which therefore would have warranted an investigation? I'm asking a question. So here's this repeat offender, this repeat beneficiary of a contractor. It didn't trigger to you that you'd want to investigate that. A response, please.
Chairperson, maybe I must indicate that Now, I've raised the issue earlier around our capacity around investigations and also how we, the capacity around investigations. So there's some initiatives that we wanted to put in place to respond to that, and I can refer to that just now, Chair. In instances where we saw this pattern of a repeat occurrence of similar service providers, that is where we had made a submission for a proclamation. So we had deferred in that instance. So on these cases, it may not reflect so, but where we had seen a pattern, we had referred it to the SIU. So that had happened there.
Before you continue, Advocate Mutebi, can you just verify this comment so we can rule agahle on it?
Perhaps, Chair, just to clarify, which area is it? Which one? I see. Yeah, we've got the KZN proclamation, which we are ready to give update on.
All right, Commissioner, you can continue.
I'd also wanted to indicate when we referred to the 80% or the 75% of the irregular expenditure, it's important just to note that around the matter of IDT, where that was referred to SIU. So the matter of the 1.8 billion had been referred to the SIU, and we in court together. And I think the IDT matter.
Chairperson, I can confirm that, but we are also ready to give an update on that one of where we are. We've investigated. Our investigation reveals that the value of the contract is about 2.2 billion. As we speak, this is one of the matter where the civil litigation process we have commenced with Briefing Council. Thanks.
Is that the IDT matter?
IDT matter.
Then there's another matter, Chair, that relates to the Giyama audit. That is the 158 million, almost 159. That matters also with the SIU. So I'm just trying to reflect that these matters are there. And then we have a matter where the DPCI has opened an inquiry on another matter, Chair. So there is engagement with law enforcement. I think in the instance that you've cited, Chair, that is a matter that I need to go back and reflect on and deal with that, Chair. So I need to reflect, indicate that. I also need to maybe indicate, Chair, that as part of our investigative challenges, I had engagement with the National Commission of Police to see if we were able to get investigators seconded to correctional service. That's a matter in process, so that we are also able to further upskill our capacity, but ensure that we're able to be more responsive to the challenges that we detect, Chairperson. I think another challenge when relating to the investigative capacity is that two of our senior members had resigned earlier this year from the investigative unit, and it's impacted on our capacity. The capacity has been limited. It's something that we are looking at further reinforcing, Chairperson.
All right.
We'll
have
Deborah.
Tie it down.
Yeah, Commissioner, has there been any money recovered from officials as a result of irregular expenditure? Or you've just condoned everything and removed from the register? And do you have any senior officials who have been found guilty of
non-compliance with the legislation in terms of regular expenditure. Those are my two questions, Chair.
All right. And then, Honorable Liz, you will come in. And are you ready? All right. No? Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. Can I just get the...
How much has been recovered? How much has been recovered from officials? Yes.
Want to indicate that there has been recovery.
The question
just
is how much
that I need to get. So I'll just ask my colleagues if they are able to get the quantum. But there has been recovery. I'll just ask the officials.
Who's going to be giving that? Which official is responsible for that?
The recoveries are on the food waste and wasteful expenditure, not necessarily on irregular, because on irregular it would be if there was a loss suffered by the state. We would pursue any recovery, but the investigation has not revealed any loss suffered by the state, where we've concluded the case as indicated by my colleague.
You know, why the soil will matter, but I would imagine that if I do not solicit three quotes, already the state has been lifted the middle finger. Because how do we then say there was no loss? Yeah. So now, that will always be my North Star, to highlight this particular issue, but it's a historic matter. How can we confidently say, CFO, that there were no losses to the state when your processes are indicating? Because, by the way, not just to latch on to Govender and Dlamini. On the first page, there's a very nice, you see, names of officials to be revealed during investigation. How far are those investigations? Yeah. Three quotes not obtained. So how can you say there were no losses?
And which barometer do you measure competitiveness and a fair process if you're not relying on more than? Because at least those are the basics for you to be able to advocate or arrive at the conclusion that your process was competitive, at least get three.
So how can you substantive to say there was no loss when the large part, your biggest headache has been the failure to solicit three quotes? Can we get a response to that, please?
Thank you, Chair. I was referring to cases which were finalized, not those that have not been investigated. And the investigators looked at whether the reasonableness of the price paid for each case. In none of those cases was there an indication by the investigator that there was it was unreasonable prices paid for by the state. Thank you.
So now we are going to apply a particular test outside the PFMA to say, well, I mean, here's my logic, and I hope it makes sense. There's a long list here of governance, I mean, of no three quotations, a long list of them. So, I mean, governor remains at work with a so-called final written. And in all of that, you are unable to take effect consequences because time lapsed. And so because of that, now the investigator says, well, a test was done. What's the yardstick measure of the lawfulness of this test? No. The only reason why we are unable to arrive at a point to say there were losses to the state is because your disciplinary processes took the longest of time, and therefore you are unable to gauge them and therefore unable to make the recoveries. That's the bottom line. Right, Honorable Mente, let me just give you more time and then you will round up your regular expenditure for us. Honorable Liz, and then just finalize Honorable Hadebe, I'm trying to manage time as
all
well.
Right.
Final one, and then Honorable Liz, Honorable Song, and then Honorable Mente, you will tie it all down with the name.
There's a mention of 125 cases that you cannot investigate, and you're not giving us reason for such. Can I get an understanding why you are unable to pursue 125 cases out of that 875? Yeah, it's 125 unable to deal with. You are unable to deal with 125 cases out of 875. But you did not explain and expatiate for us to be able to understand and comprehend why is it the case. So I'm not sure whether you want us to also accept and move on that those 125 is a lot of cases. Perhaps some of the issues of fraudulent and criminal activity might be found there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honourable Member. The 125 cases are not cases we're not going to investigate. It's just due to capacity constraints that it had not been dealt with at this point.
Perhaps the manner in which you have put it before us, you said you are unable to deal with those cases. So are you saying, because my understanding, you can't deal with those cases?
Here's the thing, Commissioner. Every time you say you raise the issue of capacity, I'm left with something in my mind that says, had these things been done year on year, you would not have the headache of capacity. Because the capacity that you had was adequate until such time that you piled on all these things due to inaction. So I would plead with you to refrain from using the issue of capacity, because it arises out of a deeper, more fundamental shortcoming, that things were not done. You are burdened with cases going as far back as 2011, which should not be a matter now, because the capacity in 2011 was sufficient. And then you piled on 2012, 2013, 2014, and now you're in 2019 with limited capacity, which must deal with work which is about 8 years. So the issue of capacity is engineered by your own shortcomings of laxity as a department, historically and otherwise. So that argument must now cease. It cannot be used continuously as we have noted it. You've got capacity issues. But let's drill to the fundamental reason why you arrive at no capacity, and it's because things were not done when they were supposed to be done. That's the issue. Honorable Tibi, we'll come to you on the issues of cases when you finish it. Let me just take us through. Right.
Chair, I accept the fact that things weren't done when they were supposed to, but maybe to indicate that there's a number of challenges apart from capacity. I think the challenge that I've discovered in the department is that even in terms of the department security alignment, structural alignment, or if you could call it security organization, there was misalignment. And that impacts on the effectiveness of our investigative units. It also impacts on the department actually duplicating processes. So there has been a fundamental problem in the department where the organizational structure has not complemented the efficiencies of the department. What we have done, Chairperson, is we've aligned our security organization so that we are able to deal with the range of investigations that we are confronted with. But the backlog has challenged us, Chairperson. So I can't get away from that fact. But we are committed to ensure that we're able to respond to this, and we have put mechanisms in place to deal with issues of irregular and fruitless expenditure. So we've dealt with, we've put a mechanism in place where we've put senior officials from regions and from head office to make sure that they monitor the processes around this investigation. So I'm acknowledging the challenge that was there, but I'm saying there's mechanisms that we've put in place. Further to that, Chair, is that we have embarked on a process of finalizing what we call a service delivery model. And that is to ensure that at the coalface, we are able to ensure that there's adequate transparency in our processes. So I just thought that I respond to that. On the issue of the 125 cases, Chair, just on page 4, I'm just not sure where Honorable... Yeah, page 4, if we look at the last column, it said number of cases not yet investigated. So if we've placed it any other way, the intention wasn't to say it's matters that we can't investigate, but it's more to say that it's matters that we had not been able to investigate up until this point. And we've placed timelines, Chairperson, to deal with some of these matters, to ensure that we're able to deal with this backlog so that we are able to respond. We've also, Chairperson, maybe it would be important to say, we've also developed a draft counter-corruption strategy to ensure that it's not just reactive, that we're not just reactive to incidents of corruption, but we are able to put preventative and detective measures in place. So that is there, and that policy or the strategy joint document is being tabled for endorsement at the end of this month.
All right, that's fine. Honorable Mahau, we'll continue with the sequence. Let's just take Honorable Liz, Honorable Somio, then Honorable Mahau, and then Honorable Mende will bring this one to a close, and then we will get an update from the SIU, and then we'll see how far we go with the issues that are supposed to go to commitments, fruitless, and deviations, all right? So, Honorable, but just Jackie, if we don't finish today, we will continue on another day. We will humble Agathe and Etagonke. Right, Honorable Liz?
Mr. Chairman, through you, we've been told that the 580 cases, none of them were referred to for criminal or other agencies, crime agencies, police and so on. So were none of those referred to the department by the SIU in terms of the investigations they're busy with? None of them.
The 580.
Thank you. The Posasa operation, 707 million, been under investigation by the SIU since 2007. That's 12 years. Have the SIU not referred any of those, any matters or for discipline in terms of those investigations?
Thank you, Chairperson. On the issue of Busasa, the SIU had done referrals to ourselves.
Thank you. And so those officials, what processes, have any of them been disciplined? Have any been dismissed?
The officials that have been cited had already left the department.
Has criminal action not been instituted against them?
The SIU will have to refer to that on the colleague.
That's
So that should be in reference to Proclamation R44 of 2007.
Correct.
Right?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure the SIU will get to that in due course. So what we are saying then, the PFMA requires the accounting officer to refer within 7 days. Are you saying to me that because the SIU is dealing with it, that clause in the Act doesn't apply?
Thank you, Chairperson. The referral that was made was specific with regard to officials as well as BUSASA as a company and the request for blacklisting the company and its directors. That has been, as a department, we have done that and we have submitted that to National Treasury.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I'm keen then to hear from the SIU, but I'm sure in due course we'll get that report. Does the same apply for the independent trust then? It was a 2017 proclamation, so that's now coming on 2 years ago.
I think the
proclamation R28.
Yes.
All right.
My question really, Mr. Chairman, let me just narrow it down. Were there any referrals on that investigation, and were those officials also left, or were they being dealt with within correctional services?
Thank you, Chairperson. On that proclamation, it actually dealt with IDT as the implementing agency. So it wasn't officials of the department. So the referral, that it would be able to refer.
Thank you. And then the other one is are not SIU. So all these other ones that the Auditor General has flagged, you referred to the engineering project, 159 million, Pezulu fencing, AG software. None of these have been fully investigated, or if they have been fully investigated, have no criminal charges been lodged against officials as a consequence?
Chair, that's really an SIU matter, because the officials, as I've indicated before, in true belief, they had left the department.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, on all these matters that the AG has flagged here.
Yes. Maybe to...
No wonder there's a capacity problem. All the officials seem to be leaving as soon as there's some sort of untoward. Chairman, thank you. Let's just wait for the SIU.
Maybe I just... At what level are these employees that are leaving? Because I'm seeing familiar faces here, so I just want to gauge what level are we talking about.
On the Proclamation 44, 2007, the individuals cited were the CFO and the National Commissioner at the time. So they were cited there, Chairperson, on those matters. There is a matter around the Guyama audits. That is one that a referral had come from the SIU, and we currently busy with a
Proclamation 28?
Proclamation
20, Chair, of 2016.
All right.
Of the Guyama.
Guyama. And then the one on the IDT Trust that Honorable Lees raises, you said they have left as well. At what level is that?
Sorry, Chairperson, no. I'd indicated that IDT was an implementing agent,
All right.
So it was not official.
And when did you apply for the blacklisting of BUSASA?
It was earlier this year. I've got correspondence. It was the beginning of this year. I'll be able to, let me just, I've got documents here, I'll be able to.
Yeah, because BUSASA had a name change. What's it called now? Yeah, it will be interesting then for you to give us an explanation as to why you are still... All right, that's fine. We'll come back to that. All right, Honorable, yes, are you done?
All right, Honorable Somyo, and then once Honorable, then Honorable Makhau, and then we do the SIU.
But thank you, Mr. Chair. The number of teachers outlining the irregular expenditure. In terms of that list, it exposes elements which are mainly of an internal nature. One example which we could cite there, 115 officials are cited as they have failed to make declarations of interest. That's basic, that's a internal lapse or failure. You see, we would want to know what has actually happened subsequently. It's a very easy matter, if I would put it that way. Just looking at that specific area, 115, you cite them because you know them. You see, what then has followed in terms of a matter of action that has followed that identification. And bidding documents not available for audit purposes. You see, this is the information which ought to be available in a file somewhere because there have been bids that have been made. And when the Auditor General gets in, that information required ought to be easily available. You pull the information, you give the Auditor General. Here is the indication that such information has never been provided. That is internal environment. Those who are involved with such kind of documentation on a daily basis ought to find it easy to give those documents to the auditor general. I'm sure this other one was referred to, that the bidding amount split into items of lesser value. This is very clear. If indeed the limit is 500,000 rand, for you to circumvent whatever process, you'd get into the easier way out. You'd want to split the items so that you easily flout such a regulation anyway. But that's as well another internal related process measure which needs some form of a requirement there. So these matters are very clear. Unfortunately, the amount has been cited by yourselves in terms of the declaration of irregular expenditure, let alone that because of the failure of these documents, the quantification could have resulted, as I think the Honorable Hadebe has referred to earlier on, the difficulty to give a conclusive figure around irregular expenditure because of these kinds of things. So how are we going to find a way of handling these matters? And the commissioner cited earlier on that maybe a number of other infringements would lapse and prescribe because of problems of the pile of these kinds of referrals there, might refer to capacity and so forth. And if these things, because they are add-ons, each and every year new things come in, old things still continue, and the environment is somewhat find itself in a very perpetual stage of occurrence in the wrong side of doing these kinds of things. Lastly, CFO, particularly to you, Chair, how long have you been in the employ of correctional services? And if I'm not mistaken, I think the commissioner has been there for probably about a year now. How long the CFO has been there, and how firm is your inspectorate directorate? You see, around these matters that relate to irregularities, and how can you guarantee firming up that kind of a capacity? Because at times, such institutions are made to be weak. So that you could find it very difficult to pursue certain matters deliberately. How could we work to improve that capability at that point? Because these are the things. So as a commissioner, you're an accounting officer, if your structures that are supposed to assist your functionality are weak, you yourself, you are going to be weak, and you are going to be weakened in a way. So how can we be guaranteed that at least there is some kind of work to firm up that ability at that point? And if they are weak, do we need them? You see, if they're made weak, you see, do we need weak structures? Because if you keep them weak, it will ensure that according to the funeral on, you don't need them if you are weakening them. But if you need them, why can't you strengthen them?
Right.
Thanks, Chair.
Okay, can we get responses to that?
Thank you, Chair. With regards to irregular expenditure in terms of the Note 26.2, what we've done is to strengthen the issue of checking the bids before they are awarded. I think that's the element which we introduced, having noted that if we don't provide oversight at the regional level as head office, there will be challenges in terms of recurrence of those non-compliance. The splitting of cases, I indicated that in some instances we did not have contracts because we had withdrawn some of the bids which would have resulted in irregular. So unfortunately some of the services that we require are of such nature, for instance on care of offenders, which is nutrition. It's not something that we can stop from procurement, food perishables. So we have indicated to Treasury, written to Treasury to request that at least they give us exemption in relation to us buying on quotation and not deem those procurement of food items as irregular whilst we're in the process of establishing a contract. Thirdly, we have also introduced, we are working with National Treasury on the nutrition services contract, where we've cancelled the African Global contract. We are working with Treasury. We saw it as an opportunity to collaborate with the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer to develop a proper terms of reference and ensure that we properly comply. And part of it is also to take advantage of economies of scale to reduce the expenditure in the food provisioning for offenders. And that process has been concluded, and we will be going out on tender and close all the gaps where there is instances where there's no contract. On the question of how long I've been with DCS, I joined DCS in April 2015, and it's now 4.5 years with the department. SCFO, yes. In relation to how firm is our inspectorate under the internal control and compliance, yes, of course, there is our assurance service providers, be it internal audit, inspectorate and internal control and compliance, departmental investigation unit, require some strengthening, particularly from an inspectorate point of view. And those are in the main, the numbers of inspectors that we need to recruit. Thank you.
All right. Are you satisfied with that, Lou Machau?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, all. Chairperson, what I would like to know from the team is that do they have an audit intervention plan in place? What is their monitoring mechanism in terms of avoiding a recurrence of what has been identified by your auditor general? Is there a functional internal audit team within the department? Because they are supposed at least to give early warning signs to the entire department. And again, you know, I would like to get time frames around the outstanding cases. Are there time frames that are attached? Because we must know when are they going to deal with the outstanding 125 cases. The last point, Chairperson, is around capacity that the department do not have. You know, if you underutilize the capacity you are having, because I'm looking at this big team from the department, listening to the responses is only the two, the commissioner and the CFO. You do not know what the entire team is doing. But they are speaking of a capacity. It is clear that the capacity that is either they are underutilizing the capacity they are having. You know, for the CFO to come with this team or for the commissioner is for the relevant officials to respond on some of the critical questions that are asked here. Would CFO has got managers under his department, your procurement managers, whatever, but not a single response who's trying to give more clarity on the CFO, who is an accounting officer. There are officials with him, but there is no response from them. I'm asking myself, how do they waste time to come here? Because there's a lot of work in their different offices, because they are just here to warm the seats. Officer, we have no time of that. So I don't know the capacity you are fighting there, because even the people that are within us, it's either they are underutilized or I don't know, because they do not respond or asking the commissioner and the CFO in terms of answering the simple questions. This is not the first department. Sometimes you'll find out the director general is saved by the team that is leading. I don't know what is going on. Can I get an indication? Because this picture that I'm seeing, a full team, full, the chairs are full of people, but they are just keep quiet. On HR issues, whosoever, there's no need that SFO to answer HR-related issues or on your discipline processes. There are relevant officials that are supposed to give us the information that we need here, but I fumanik. Thank you very much.
Right, let's get a response to those three questions. And I must indicate, Commissioner, that I'm sure the CFO will share with you. We have raised before the number of officials that come down. Correctional Services always has a big team. Always. And at some point, which is this point, gauge its usefulness. Right? Responses, please. Audit, please bring the mic closer to you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the questions. I might have not jotted them as they were asked. I think the first question was, do we have an action plan, AG action plan in place that will address what the members are concerned with? I must say from the audit committee that there is an action plan, and for this year, we requested that management must look at the root causes, because the plan that we found out that was being used did not really address the root causes. And in doing that, we are also working with Auditor General on the qualifications for them to be able to assist us as to whether the root causes are being addressed. Also to say we have put a system in place to deal with, I think we can see that there were adjustments that were done on our AFS. So we have put a system that is dealing with the interim financial statements that management is preparing just to try and address matters that we don't want to see them in the audit report. And as the audit committee, we are concerned that we are qualified year in and year out. We also ask management to have a key commitment system. The question that Madam asked to say, we have a team, and this team, what is our role in the department? In terms of the AG Action Plan, we have recommended that there should be a key commitment where everybody put hands on deck. And the other thing that we have introduced is to have an independent risk committee chair. Because some of the things in terms of the root causes is like we don't have a proper risk management systems in place. And some of the audit findings and control deficiencies are appearing because we don't align them to any risk that we can identify. So the process of advertisement is running, and we think that within maybe the next reporting period, the systems will be in place. The other issue that were raised on the AG was the IT governance challenges. In there as well, we have appointed an independent person that is addressing IT governance. I think the audit findings for IT were more than 100, and we are also addressing that. Issue of internal audit capacity, I think at the moment the staff that is there is able to address the risk that we are identified in the department. However, like the commissioner said, the organogram is being reviewed because we also want to capacitate internal audit as one of the arm of governance structure. So I think things will shape up, and in the next reporting period we'll be reporting a different picture. We are committed as the audit committee, and management as well is committed to turn a corner. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Chairperson. Just to reflect the team that we brought along are technical experts in different fields, and I may have just brought the wrong experts because we thought that you were going to ask in some of the areas that the colleagues are here, who are here, would have so that they could have responded to that. On the matter of the time frames of the outstanding 125, we are targeting to make sure that is concluded by the end of this financial year, or prior to the end of the financial year. And then maybe as part of our trying to strengthen our assurances within the department, we have also appointed we're in the process of recruiting an independent chairperson for our risk committee. Chair.
All right. Honorable Mentor, I will come to you. I just want to the audit committee in the annual report presents a very very rosy picture. There's significant strides being taken. We speak about improvements in qualification. There was a qualification in 17-18 on disclosures, the same in the year under review. There was no qualification on disclosure of irregular expenditure last year. There is one this year. And then it just baffles the mind how audit committee, I would have really thought audit committee would have been more brutal given the prevailing realities that are there. If you read this report, it certainly does not
Yeah, but we'll come back to it, because what the audit finds and what the audit committee says, for me, are very much worlds apart. Right? Honorable Mente, can you tie it down for us? And then when you are done, Advocate Mutibi, you can take us through the the investigations, the proclamations. I think it's timely that you come in at that point, because they will be in far better context now. And then when you are done, colleagues will take that, and then we'll see how we move forward. I'm Funis Nyanyala, right, Honorable Mente?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to try to tie it down as quickly as possible. But the first thing I want to flag is that we need to find a slot quite sooner for correctional services to come back well prepared. These are the areas where we need clarity that is going to be sufficient for us to be satisfied and also buy into their narrative that they are doing everything, they have new action plan and whatnot. One, on the question of Hadid, 580 cases finalized. All those cases finalized, no one was found guilty of anything. Chair, there's a narrative within the department, and the CFO has cited this as well, that where irregular expenditure occurs, there isn't much they can recover. In fact, it's not necessary for them to recover. It's a wrong narrative. Because irregular expenditure is a room for corruption. You asked the question, if have they identified a single service provider being awarded business irregular? There was no answer. Now, what I need is that in their next meeting, can they bring us the list of all these 580 cases that are finalized with merit? If Mende was charged, when did that occur? Who identified that case? The name of the official, the merits of the case, when was it finalized? I do not want to believe that 580 instances of people who have breached the PFMA, which is very clear. Section 86, accounting officer, this section is going to apply to you if you fail to do what's expected of you. Because once people breach Section 37, 38, 39, 40, and you do nothing, then 86 is going to be applicable to you. We'll have to ask the minister to enforce it upon you. Unfortunately enough, you are saying you have been here, you have been in DCS for at least a year. It means you are familiar with the processes where we babysitted in the previous parliament. We babysitted DCS to get it out of the state, yet there is no movement. All the five financial years of the previous parliament, DCS would come here and appear. And it has been babysitted throughout. But to this stage, we do not get satisfaction or indication that things are happening. And therefore, the minister will have to do something and evoke Section 86 upon you. That's the first area of 580 cases detailed. The second area on the action plan, audit committee. We need the detailed audit action plan on note 26.2. There's one area, Chair, I'm actually very interested in, where there was a rental of accommodation without signed lease agreement. You get into, you pay, with who paid without a lease? Who pays state funds without a lease? So we need the action plan on 26.2 for us to see that you are doing something in all of them, detailed, especially the one who rented officers without a lease. We want to know what have you done to that person. You don't, you cannot push a button on public funds, pay someone with non-existing agreement in place. And we do not know whether that money has been shifted also to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. How do you then say it's not recoverable when a person rents a space irregularly without an agreement? Let's just say you were informed on the day that today your rental is coming to an end, and therefore the owner of the building is closing the offices. The person who was supposed to monitor the process of leases in your office, you have that particular component who is responsible for leases. Don't they have a dictionary? Don't they know the calendar? Don't they have a list of what they have to do every day? Who was supposed to have overseen this process of ensuring that all buildings, their leases are renewed? Who did not do it? As irregular as it may be, let's just say that the money which was paid was befitting because there had to be accommodation. But what happened to the official who sat and slept at work? And it means that you then issued a contract to a person who was supposed to have not having business with the state at the time, or you are repeating a same service provider. Those are the tricks that are there. If it's not inflation of prices, it's people being issued jobs irregularly, so that we are saying we didn't have any other choice. Then number three, Chair, I have a serious problem with, there's an item on line 350 of your schedule, and there's an item on line 550 and 551. You gave written warnings to the adjudication committee. This one, Chair, I would like an answer instant. It says here, what is it? 551 and 552. Names of officials to reveal during investigation. That's 551. And then investigation conducted, member of the adjudication committee given written warnings. I would suppose that an adjudicator is a very responsible person. How then do you arrive or accept a written warning to an adjudicator of a process which is supposed to be fair and guard the state? Do we? And then I have a problem with names of officials to be revealed during investigation, yet there is a warning given. there's contradiction on your statement. The general note is a warning, but your status of an official to be revealed later. That's why I need an instant response.
Well, let's deal with that particular one. It's on page 22 of 32. CETA Act not followed.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been advised that all the people that was on the committee, adjudication committee, were given written warnings. And this matter happened prior to my time. But, it was given written warnings to all members of the adjudication committee.
Now, I think that the question, we note that the question is why. That's the issue. The report is saying that. But the question is, why a written warning? I mean, I think the principal question is, why is it difficult for correctional services to dismiss people? I think that should be, colleagues can reflect that for the second round of the meeting, the particular set of circumstances which were undertaken for that and the processes that were followed. Because let me put it this way, are these people still there? They are still, Commissioner, there's a follow-up there.
Yes.
Why are their names not listed there? Why are some names there and some names not there? Because I would imagine the investigation is concluded, right? Then who are they? If we can name Dlamini and Govender, who are those people?
Can we provide that when we come back to
Aibu? You don't have the names of the adjudication committee here? Right, there seems to be a hand at the back.
Just on that one in particular, I think it would be worth noting to yourself and the committee that the Treasury had particularly reviewed this tender before award, and concerns were raised at that point in time, but the award went ahead and AG picked it up at the point where the expenditure was incurred.
So, okay. That's why my stakeholders must be here, because they give us that perspective. So who are these individuals?
And they okay on 552 as well.
Yeah, it's 551 and 552. Commissioner, please just bring the mic closer
yes.
to you.
In this committee, it was the CDCs presided on that.
Right. CDCs are the DDGs. So is that why their names are not there?
I don't believe that that's why they're not there, but I think some of them are not with the department anymore, but I need to get the deal.
No, but I mean,
Look, this is, we're speaking, what, it's 18 million rands we're speaking about there, right? Yeah. So you've got DDGs whom flouted Treasury, and you have got DDGs that received written warnings. That is precisely the problem. That the higher you climb, the cooler the air, and therefore the more prone you are to ugang. So, Commissioner, which CDCs are we talking about here? And why did they receive written warnings, and who presided over their disciplinary process?
Chairperson, is it possible that I can come back so that I get the decision?
No, it's not possible.
Okay.
Because, you see, you've got other names here, so I don't understand why those names are not there. It's at this particular point where I'm actually just going to wait, because we seem to be referring a lot of things that side and the answers are not forthcoming. This does not augur well, generally. Optics are a very powerful indicator of the problems. And sitting here reading this sixes and sevens, I mean, I would imagine that having a DDG implicated in a matter, you would know off the head who it is. I mean, it just, you would just ordinarily know. Like, I can tell you in this committee off my head to Boshupai. I don't need to consult with it. He is the Nango. Say she, you see? It's that simple.
No, Chair, the CDC Jito will get the names. I know of two. There's only two CDCs that still with the department.
What are the full names? And Commissioner, I'm going to, be honest, I'm going to sit here and literally wait.
No, they will get the names. I'll let the CDC HR just call all the names out, Chairperson.
We can apply to sit in the afternoon as well.
I'm particularly not. We've got our ESCOM report this afternoon. We will go and present it if we have to and come back. But in the trend is a better today. We'll see how we go. I think we all are indicate. Maybe let me start here. Who chairs this bid adjudication committee? Who chairs it?
CFO chairs it.
Right, progress. Okay, so who are the members of the CFO's bid adjudication committee? So the CFO must tell us who his committee people are. He's the chair.
We're just looking for that in this instance, just exactly who the members were at the time, then we can talk about.
So was that written warning to all members of the adjudication committee, including the CFO?
Yes, Chair.
I did ask this question earlier on, that which position are some of these officials occupying? I was not given an answer, and yet some of the official is here.
snack. Let's deal with it. I think it's opportune. How many CDCs do you have?
Thank you, Chair. The members of the National Bid Adjudication Committee was myself as CFO and Chairperson. There was also another CDC, James Smallbagger. Third one.
What is he or she responsible for?
Is retired. He was responsible for incarceration and corrections.
Okay.
And CDC Jito, which is Ms. Musupia.
The lady. All right. The one who was looking for the information for us.
CDC, that this one has retired, has resigned. CDC HR Mukwena. And CDC remand detention resigned as well, Rothman. And Deputy Commissioner Ngubo has since retired.
Right. Now, you see, I'll come to an agreement. You see, Commissioner, that's what I have a problem. Because earlier on, I latched on this thing of names of officials not being revealed. If we were to go case by case, all these things, and ask for the names of the people whom have not been revealed here, but the investigation been concluded, would we find senior management? Because my second issue, I would like to hear your response to what Treasury is saying. Would this went ahead despite what National Treasury said? Because it would mean then we are seated with DDGs who don't give two hoots in hell about what National Treasury has to say. And some funny exercise to shield them has been couched in this document that you presented, not to cite their names. And then now we ask for the names and it takes 200 years and the people who are seated right here in this room, why is there no honesty just to say it's myself? Now we must probe and what and sit here and wait. Where's the conviction of honesty at the very least to the positions that you occupy? Now we're creating some sort of crisis and scandal where ordinarily none resides if your processes are open, transparent and fair and you are confident that you have done the right thing. But this vile doyeros that you are taking us on now to now probe you to just simply give us names is very, very telling about the extent to which protectionism of each other exists. It's not acceptable by any measure or standard. And in fact, I feel like you are not engaging with us in good faith. And if that's the case, we have a very serious problem. Because this is the outset of the sixth parliament, so you stuck with us for 5 years. And we're not going to interact and engage with each other on the basis of this kind of shady finder that has just happened here. I take a strong exception in behalf of the committee of the men in which we have handled this particular aspect of this meeting. It says a lot, because now I'm compelled to say that this document that you have handed over to us in its entirety needs a full day's meeting where we go through case by case, one by one, to get to the bottom of who these individuals are. You cannot have ODDG who will literally tell National Treasury to go and jump, and the best that you can do is give them written warnings. Yes?
to say I'm irritated would be an understatement. But my irritation is neither here nor there. It's the issue of principle and conviction and adherence to the law. It's a matter of non-compliance. Treasury says something else, and the CFO and other DDGs continue on their trajectory. No wonder then we've got problems. That is fundamentally the issue, that there's a cherry-picking insofar as the application of one, the law is concerned, and adherence to National Treasury's directives. It's not acceptable. Who presided over the disciplinary processes of these individuals that have been cited? Because as far as they are, I'm concerned, they added and abetted this kind of non-compliance themselves. Right. Can I get a response and I'll come to Honorable Mendo to finish?
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe I'll take responsibility and apologize that we didn't put all the names here, and I'll make sure that we do that. The intention was not to hide.
Chair, I don't think that is acceptable, Chair. How do you arrive at the conclusion of including other names and not include those that are before us?
That's the nub of the issue. Maybe
you cannot say you apologize. You have deliberately and consciously included names of other people that were disciplined, but those that you brought with you, you do not include them, and you want us to accept that apology. Give us the reason why you deliberately and consciously decided to exclude other names. I would have understood that the entire document does not contain names. You saw it fit to tell us about Ms. Lamine and Govender. Earlier on I asked, how many senior officials? I did not get a response. I even went as far as how much money has been recouped from those senior officials. Yet some of them are sitting with us. So the apology, I don't think it is acceptable, not at all, unless there were no names in the entire document. That I would have understood.
Because on page 22, in the same page, item 542 and 543, the same members of the adjudication committee given written warnings. Is those the same individuals? Right at the very top on that schedule.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, the way in which it is one is two contracts which were awarded without following CETA, awarded to the two companies that reflected. But on the register, we are, it's a transaction where payments were made. And for each transaction relating to that contract, then we make the note on what occurred.
Did Commissioner, you were still on the floor before Honorable Hatebe captured all of us on the point that he raised.
The key point, Chair, was just to say that I accept the responsibility for not, but it's, the intention was not to mislead.
Who presided over the disciplinary process of these DDGs?
It was code enforcement. It's the outfit that deals with the disciplinary process within the department.
Can I put it to you this way, Commissioner? Are you, does it augur well for National Treasury not to be listened to, for lack of a better term, by DDGs? Categorically, what's your reaction to that kind of conduct? Because it places in jeopardy your future interaction with National Treasury. I would like to hear what you have to say about this particular set of circumstances and the reaction to what Treasury has said now.
Chairperson, what I can say is that it is not conducive for us not to have a good working relationship with National Treasury, especially when they prescribe how things should be done. So I hear the sentiment of the committee.
So we've got your commitment that adherence will be there.
Yes.
With what Treasury has to say.
Yes.
Well, let me put it to you now, Chair. I would, Commissioner, this particular set of circumstances needs a particular review of sorts. We cannot have leadership at that level, and the only way to curb this is if we effect stronger and more stringent consequences. A written warning simply does not fly. It's just not acceptable. Because I still maintain this document was not prepared in good faith in its entirety. And it was not. Because then it leads me to the question, Commissioner, who prepared it on behalf of the department? And you, noting you've also said there are challenges with it. So who prepared it?
Chairperson, the custodian of the document is supply chain. So the people that prepare the document is supply chain unit.
Who's head of supply chain?
Pardon?
Who's the head of supply chain? So say, this is the document prepared by yourselves. Please state your name for the record.
Thanks, my name is Loham Marumuli.
What's your position in the establishment?
My position, I'm head of supply chain management at Correctional Services.
And this document on your regulations was prepared by yourselves?
Yes, it was prepared by supply chain
management. What was the rationale in not including other names in it?
The rationale not including other names in it is that we did not have that particular information to put it into its particular slot. Basically, what we do is that we manage the regular register, but there are different units that beef up the process, the progress of that particular document.
So other in other spaces they had names and in others they didn't? Because there are names here.
Yes, Chair, the names are going to be informed by information that we receive from supply chain management. For an example,
but you are the head of supply chain management. You can't be receiving it from yourself. I suggest, Chair, you say you tread very carefully with your responses.
Chair, the updating of the document, we receive information from the outcome of the investigation.
So you did not receive the outcome of the investigations of the issues that we cite?
We did not receive that.
Then how did it get in here?
The reason why it got in here is because of we receive the payments that were made based on that particular transaction that was raised as irregular.
But then what informed you knowing that the people there received written warnings? Where did you get that from? Because the written warning would have had attached to it a name. Who got it?
What informed the written warnings, Chair, is the information that we received.
So you received some information but not all information. Who was supposed to give you the information? Colleagues, please bear with me.
The information was supposed to get it from code enforcement.
And they did not give it to you?
No.
And you were comfortable enough to submit it knowing the irregularities, the shortcomings rather? You didn't see it fit to say that in certain instances information was not given to you? You did not see it fit to flag that? Ukuthi information was not given?
To respond to that particular one is that we operate in terms of the information that we receive, and apparently that particular information we did not receive. So we
captured that point. My point is, you were supposed to receive information, you didn't, and I'm saying to you, you didn't see it fit to flag it in the schedule that the information was given to you. Didn't it strike you as strange that you were able to put names of other people and not the names of others? And conveniently, the names you did not put in are those who are your seniors?
Besides, are you not interested in knowing who are these officials who are in contravention of the supply chain management and are given warning, so that in future, when the same culprits commit the same, because I would believe that a written warning would say, if you do this in future, these are the severe punishment you would get. So you're not even interested in knowing who are those people. What if the very same people have continuously contravened the very same act because you are unaware of who are they? Is that ethical leadership on your side?
Right. Can we get a response? Because I want to continue probing this document, right?
It's not a question that we are not interested in terms of who are those particular people. As I've indicated, Chair, that what will happen is that we are the custodian of the irregular expenditure. If there's investigations and processes that happen outside that particular process, and then if ever there's no information that comes to supply chain management to update in terms of what has transpired, we can't update that particular information.
Which have you been vetted?
Yes.
You're the head of supply chain management.
Yes.
Right. In your unit, who has not been vetted?
At this particular point in time, I don't have actually the list with me, but the number of people within that particular process underway that the vetting process within supply chain management and correctional services.
So you don't have that information either?
I do, but not with me at this stage.
Well, where is it? I would imagine that we are living in four high up times now. Information is all soft information. What I'm trying to get at is that you cannot in good faith sit there and say that you had compiled this document in good faith. You can't. You are selective, you cherry-picked. And you're not in a position to prove me otherwise wrong, prove me otherwise that I'm wrong. You can't. Because if you say that the information was not given to you, how is it that it was able to be given to us now? Because you did not ask the questions that you were supposed to ask, and you chose to give Parliament a half-baked information, transmitted it through to the Commissioner, who as the accounting officer, gave it to us. So as far as we are concerned, this is his document that he got from you. And you just did a half-baked exercise. So the question is, was it deliberate, or was it because of some sort of pressure or instruction? It's got to be one of the two. Why would you submit information to us that is half-baked? Because this, you see, because we labor on the basis of this document. Parliament works on the basis of all the information that you give us, the whole regiment of it.
Chair, it was not deliberate.
Then what was it? I've noted you, Commissioner. Then what was it?
As I've indicated, Chair, is that the update is based on the submission of that particular information.
So you don't ask for information, you just wait to receive it?
No, we reconcile each and every month in terms of progress.
Yeah,
from
you reconcile what you receive or what is submitted or what you ask for?
We reconcile what we receive and also what has been submitted.
Not what you ask for. So you don't ask for anything. So if all of us here are supposed to give you information and we don't give it to you, then you tick the box. Done. What do you ask for?
We ask for information.
Right. Did you ask for information around this particular transaction?
Yes, we ask that
person.
We ask it from code enforcement.
And what was their response?
Their response that is confidential.
It is confidential? And shouldn't that response have been in here? I put it to you, sir, tread very carefully with the responses that you give. Shouldn't then you have put that in here? So as far as you're concerned, the commissioner and the team have just revealed to us confidential information on disciplinary processes. Does that not strike
sorry,
you
chair.
As odd?
Sorry, Chair. Just on the confidentiality. Why is the DG that has been disciplined, why is that confidential? But Governor and Dlamini is not confidential. Why the distinction? Why the one is confidential, the other two is not confidential? Why Governor and Dlamini is not confidential?
Honorable Somya, tell us, be patient, Yoba. Even if colleagues, we don't conclude everything today, what I'm trying to highlight is the organizedness, if there's such a word, if there's not second language. of this, I'm going to. He owes me 100 rand and then coke. Honorable Somya.
Probably the members of the committee. I would appeal that why can't we? I don't know, it's normal or what, but it's extraordinary, I suppose. That we have a few minutes with the commissioner and give all other members time to have a comfort break or whatever, that the committee can have a few minutes with the commissioner in absence of all these other members who are somewhat here.
What would we be discussing? I just want to get the scope of the proposal.
The scope of the proposal is based on the fact that here we are sitting on a very simple matter. We are receiving a report, and that report is exclusive of a quality information, which has proved to us that those who are subject of such are with the commissioner. And the team that he is with, the team that is supporting him, it looks like that in a manner of a number of things here are somewhat primarily a subject in the wrong side of things that are somewhat happening in the department.
No, I think the commissioner has taken ownership of the document and the challenges therein. What I was really trying to get at is what I can, left for a better term, call a paper trail of this document. Its escalation, where it originated from. And what I was really trying to establish was that this document as it stands now is half-baked and cherry-picked. So I would ask us to bamba kancane on that one and see how far we can go, because there's other implications now if we want a tete-a-tete with the commissioner and close meetings and so on in other rooms, just to get that. So I would.
It's not a closed meeting, Chair. It's a meeting which solely allows the commissioner the depth of matters in his hands, because here we are, the supply chain management unit responsible
for supply chain matters. Here is the CFO responsible for the entirety of management of finances. Here is a team within HR which is required to affairs with some quality aspects in terms of HR. And on the qualitative instance, you don't know the document, but the document is a signal that the depth of matter. You saw, we've made reference here in terms of note 26.2. In terms of that note, already with inference, it points somewhere. In terms of the departmental functionality, in a way, and you talk about all these kinds of occurrences, and the people who are primarily involved are here in the house.
Okay. Let us. Okay, I will. We'll wait to it. There's a hand.
Okay.
On the matter, then I'll just make a decision on it, right? Honorable Sonia?
Yeah.
Dex?
Yeah, Jay, I do not know which route we should take here because, you know, this is quite embarrassing, very, very embarrassing. The commissioner came here and he claimed ownership, which is correct. Politically correct for him to claim ownership, strips the document. He cannot come here and not claim the document, so he claims the document. But it seems like officials in his department have misled him. And that's what we are speaking about, consequence management. And we want to see consequence management here too. That the commissioner must act against these officials that misled him. Because maybe the commissioner did not have an opportunity to go through that document thoroughly. Two members of this committee, the chair, yourself and Honorable Hateva, picked the document apart. Just two of you picked this document to pieces. Now, I do not know much we excuse those members. Or must they must sit here, I think, perhaps, and yes, they must hear these things that they have done. But that was later, Commissioner.
Yeah. Now, colleagues, I will request this way, that we will continue in the presence of the officials, because they must hear this, and the Commissioner must be bold to his office and the convictions thereof. If we are not satisfied with responses, we will indicate as such. So I think I just want to tie it down on, but I note what you're saying, so we will tread with that in mind if that need arises. But I think for now it's good that they are here because they are the generators of information and of the problem. Yeah, that's the issue. Right, Honorable Hadebe?
I understand the fact that the author of the report is the head of supply chain, but surely the report has been approved somewhere.
Yeah, I was coming to that.
Now, I would love to get an understanding who approved that report.
The commissioner has taken ownership of this report as the accounting officer.
So
this is his document. But where I was going was, he said there are challenges with the document an hour ago. And then Honorable Mente picked up on these transactions. What has triggered this discussion is to get to the root cause of why are certain names hidden and others revealed. And we went on a via dolorous trying to find out, and the individuals whose names should be there in the room. Now, I wanted to continue a little bit on the question on the issue of confidentiality. Who classified that as confidential? So I'm back to you, head of supply chain.
Thanks. In terms of the classification, I'm not sure I can respond to that, but when we are requesting information, we request that from there's a unit that is dealing with disciplinary, which is code enforcement.
Where's the head of enforcement? Right? Enforcement commissioner?
Chairperson, he is not here. I raised my hand earlier, Chairperson. I was just wondering if the committee will indulge me to look into this matter and come back to the committee with a report.
Okay, we note that request for now.
Are you the
not
same?
Not accept, I just noted.
Yeah, no, I'm saying for us to be able to do that, I want to get an understanding. Are you the same accounting officer which is implicated in the Auditor General finding that the accounting officer did not effectively exercise oversight responsibility regarding financial and performance reporting and compliance as well as related internal controls? The accounting officer did not establish effective communication on certain policies, procedures to enable the support and the understanding of execution of internal control objectives, processes, and responsibilities. Are you the same accounting officer? So that when we give you time, we bear that in mind.
I think the question the basis of it. Commissioner, you've been the year under review, you've been there in its entirety. Yes.
So he's the same accounting officer. And he wants us to.
Can I just ask this, Commissioner, when did you receive this compilation from supply chain?
I received it on Friday.
Correct. So you've had time to. Okay. I note what you've said. We will decide on it now. But whatever we do, there will be terms and conditions. Honorable Mente and Honorable Zibula, and then I'm going to propose a way forward to colleagues. Right?
Now, before I go to the other two I mentioned, the two other transactions, Chair, where are these warning letters? Chair, we need to get a site or copies of the warning letters.
Right. No, that's
where are they? And we want to see the charges on the letters. There's quite an interesting indication made earlier on that it's one contract, however, is different transactions that are made on a contract. So on each occurrence of a transaction, then they have to cite an irregularity. The first instance, you see irregularity, you press the pay button. The second instance, you are well aware that is an irregular contract, you still press the pay button. You get charged. You are given a written warning. Can we see the charges on those written warnings and the letters? Who can email them in 5 minutes?
Okay.
Dombi, avail the email address, please.
Yeah. See, what we're trying to do is work in real time. Because there is a tendency to, Commissioner, that's why I'm saying I note that that will come back, you see. So we generally don't, unless we initiate that. All right. Colleagues, Honorable Zibula?
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm so surprised that I was thinking that this sitting would be very easy because we are dealing with the police, the people who deals with the law, but only to find that they're putting us in the big hole. I want to disagree with the Commissioner. He's owning the report, and he disowns the report. And then he's telling us that you must give him time. Chairperson.
Yeah.
I believe that whoever is here, those people, they prepare themselves that they will face this committee. To me, it shows that the officials we believe on, those officials got problems. So I don't know what to say, but Commissioner, you took an oath.
we believe what is coming from you. It must be true. Don't lay up. As we are sitting here, we've got lots of work. We were supposed to see other people. But we are sitting with you because we wanted to hear what is the issue. But now only to find that we are lost. We are lost. And you tell us this is your report. But you disown again the report. Commissioner, we're going to give you a chance on those what Chairperson said he wants in those reports. But I also have the problem because the issue here is huge. The money of the government is gone. It's a problem. How are we going to trust you if the issues are like that? You can't even respond on your report. I thank you.
All right. Let's do this so that we can find a point of convergence. Can the SIU present to us now there's merit in what Mom Zibula is saying. We can't create a trust deficit. Interest with us in good faith is important. That's all we want. Right? Advocate Mutibi, I'll hand over to you. Right. There's a small matter there, Honorable Mente. We'll come back to the issues. I'm hoping that the SIU presentation provides clarity in certain aspects, and then we'll come back and tie on it, and then we will map out a way forward. Right, Honorable Mente. So I'm not closing. Yeah.
No, Chair. I hear what you are saying. And I understand particular document there are transactions that are indicating SIU investigation, and therefore the SIU will report to that. However, there are the ones that are very much questionable.
Uh-huh.
And before we give it to SIU, can we then get the status of who is emailing to us the warning letters? And who is getting the names of the unrevealed individuals?
Right.
Whilst SIU is reporting, we get that when we go back to the correctional services, we get the information as well, right out. Because there's also two areas which I want them to include. Line 567 with 707 million.
Page
23.
Okay. Right.
Page 23.
Right, 567, okay.
Line 567, there's a request for condonation of 707 million. And still the names of officials are not revealed. That was an overspending on an extension. So that's unauthorized expenditure. And there is line 330, page 5, so line 350.
Okay.
Names of officials not revealed, but is pending condonation by National Treasury. So you send certain people to be condoned, but they cannot be known. They can spend as much money irregularly, and we do not know the extent in which the damage is done in terms of the PFMA.
All right.
Can we hand over to Advocate Mtibi and his team to take us through the and then I just want to Advocate Mtibi, as you come through on the 19th of on the 14th rather of November, I sent through correspondence to correctional services, which amongst other things indicated on item 4, register of irregular expenditure, A, names of officials involved, and B, cases which have been concluded in this regard. This is just the tracking document of the committee, which I had lost sight of and has just been reminded of it now. So we had already come here really knowing that this should have happened. Right, Advocate Mtibi.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. We have been invited to be part of this meeting to observe and to make input where required. We will make input with regard to the proclamation and investigations that we have conducted at the correctional services. And I've noticed that those proclamations are mentioned by the Auditor General in the annual report of the correctional services. I think it's on page 132. I start off with proclamation 44 of 2007, the one that investigated the Busasa business in the correctional services. That proclamation had about four focus areas: the installation of kitchens, access control tender, fencing tender, and television installations. That investigation has been concluded. The presidential report was submitted on the 30th of April 2013, and the outcomes covered the referrals for disciplinary hearing. It also referred or recommended to the department to institute civil proceedings. Why is it that at that time was a referral for the department to institute civil litigation? Because at that time, which was 2007, was before the amendment of the SIU legislation, which enabled SIU to institute civil litigation. So the department had to institute civil litigation themselves at the time. And it was within the SIU at the time, in all the focus areas, recommended civil litigation against Busasa. We've interacted with the department. The information we received was that at the time the department did not institute civil litigation. The referrals to NPA covered the former CFO, the former commissioner, and some of the officials of the Busasa. Until recent, as members may be aware, that the NPA has since now instituted charges against Mr. Agrizi, Mr. Gillingham, the former Commissioner MT. We're mentioning the names simply because they are charged and it's public. So we were quite glad to see that action being taken. We will obviously, together with the NPA, monitor how far the criminal proceeding unfolds. There has also been referrals for, as I said, for disciplinary processes against the former CFO, and at that time of the referrals, we were informed that the former commissioner had resigned and the department could not take action against him. The former CFO, the disciplinary action commenced against him, and he resigned during the civil during the disciplinary process. So the referrals against all the focus areas, although it would be different referrals, but they also covered. On the kitchen tender in particular, it referred to the Busasa operations, civil litigation, and the criminal proceedings against Mr. Gillingham, Mti, and Busasa officials. The access control tender, it included one of the subsidiaries of Busasa, which is Sondolo, which was the access control tender. Again, we found that there were irregularities in the submission of the tender. We also recommended civil litigation against Sondolo, and again, the institution of disciplinary processes against Mr. Gillingham, who was the former CFO. As the report says, the department did institute civil disciplinary process against him, but he resigned afterwards. And again, there were NPA referrals, and they covered the same names of people in this regard, including Sondolo now. Sondolo was also referred for NPA for prosecution. There was also a fencing tender, which included again a subsidiary of Busasa, which is Pezulu Fencing. The SIU recommended civil litigation against Pezulu, disciplinary hearings against the former CFO, and the criminal referral against these officials. The NPA referrals against the former CFO, the former commissioner, and Pezulu Fencing as a company. Yes. Right. And also other office bearers of Busasa. And then the television tender. The SIU recommended civil litigation against Sondolo IT, which was a subsidiary of Busasa. The department was also implored to institute civil disciplinary proceedings against the former CFO, and the NPA referrals against Mr. Gillingham, Commissioner MT, Sondolo, and Busasa and their office bearers. We've also, as SIU, found that there was a corrupt relationship, evidence pointing to the former CFO, and that evidence was also referred to NPA. So as I indicated, the final report was submitted long ago, 30 April 2013. I move on to Proclamation 18 of 2016. This proclamation refers to the electronic monitoring. There's a company referred to as ESS. The investigation has been completed, and the presidential report submitted on November 2019, and the outcomes are as follows. We found that there were irregularities in awarding the tender to ESS, and we have made recommendations for the disciplinary process against former national commissioner. We've also made recommendations for disciplinary process against one person who was the director supervision and the deputy director of monitoring. We, in conjunction with the department, who should then indicate to us whether those processes have been instituted. We've also made recommendation for the disciplinary process against members of the BIT specification committee, and who were four in number and five of the BIT evaluation committee. So again, in this regard, the department had to inform us whether no action has been taken against those people. We've also made a referral to, because in this regard, because it relates to some security aspects of the tender, we found that there were irregularities which we have referred to CIRA, which is the regulatory authority of the security industry. We have been informed that CIRA has appointed an inspector to conduct further investigations, which are currently ongoing. We will continue to monitor that part. We've also made 26 referrals in 2018 to NPA, which the SIU submit warrants the institution of criminal proceedings. In this regard, we have followed up with NPA. We've been informed that NPA has referred this matter to Serious Commercial Crimes Unit, and a prosecutor has been allocated for these matters. We've also referred matters relating to Asset Forfeiture Unit, and as those fall under the NPA, we've also been informed that those matters are receiving attention. I go now to Proclamation 20 of 2016. The Commissioner, in his presentation, made reference. This is the so-called Giyama investigation. The investigation is complete, and the presidential report was submitted on the 8th of June, 2018. But I can take the committee through the high-level outcomes, which are as follows. We found that there were irregularities in the procurement of the service provider. This one related to the piggybacking provision, where the department piggybacked on a contract which was with the Department of Education. We found that the process, as the investigation revealed, that process was not appropriately applied, and we did refer the former national commissioner, who was at the time of the tender the chairperson of the BID committee.
Okay, for TV, sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
There have been 2, 3, 4 former commissioners, so I'm not sure how we distinguish who's who, because there's been Modise, Moyane, and so on, so that we don't get lost in who's who. So, but I'm sure you will just find a way to clarify that.
Yes. No, I will do that. And we thank you for that. We've also made a recommendation for the disciplinary process of the acting chief financial officer at the time, and if there's a need for names, I'm sure we can make sure that those are provided. The director of professional services, who also had to be disciplined. We have made a process for civil litigation, which was to recover the appropriate funds. The contract value at the time, the Giyama assessment project with a value of 928 million, but because of some of the recalculations, the contract value was reduced to about 474 million. That matter is now pending in court. Our chief legal will give update on where we are on those civil litigation. As I said, the presidential report was submitted on the 8th of June of
2018 the investigation is complete. There's also Proclamation 28 of 2017. This relates to fencing, and this is where the IDT comes in as an implementing agent. This investigation is still ongoing. It's projected to be completed in March 2020, but we can highlight to the committee in terms of the outcomes. The outcomes are as follows to date. We have made a recommendation for disciplinary hearing, and in this regard is to the IDT. 13 referrals of officials and 18 referrals for the contraventions of PSMA. I've just been informed by my team that IDT has informed us actions have been taken, but again, we can itemize in terms of the officials against whom action has been taken, and if need be, the names can be revealed. There's also a process that's underway to make sure that we institute civil litigation. The contract value is about 2.2 billion, and because this is a new matter that we will now institute, this will be referred to the special tribunal. We've also referred matters to CERA, which is the regulatory for the security, and we've also made referrals to NPA, one for fraud, two for contravention of Section 38 of the CERA, and also there has also been some other referrals that indicate that these officials willfully failed to ensure that DCS has and maintained effective and efficient transparent systems of financial and risk management. We've also made referrals for the AFU, which is the asset forfeiture unit. The last proclamation that appears is the one, Proclamation 10 of 2018. This proclamation refers to the investigations that is still ongoing at KZN DCS. While the investigations are ongoing, we can, however, at this stage indicate to the committee that we have projected to complete this investigation in February 2020, and the outcomes to date are as follows. We have referred about 8 officials, including the regional commissioner of the DCS, who were implicated in about 18 tenders. We've referred these officials to the national commissioner for disciplinary processes to be instituted. We've referred 41 service providers to the NPA in relation to criminal matters in relation to this investigation. We've also made referral for blacklisting, about 6 referrals against specifics, against some service providers, which have been handed over to DCS to consider blacklisting the service providers. There's also some referrals to SARS, and this relates to the regional commissioner. We are still investigating some of the aspects which the evidence at the moment may indicate to the irregularities around the assets of the regional commissioner. Once the investigation is complete, we will also report that. There's also civil proceedings that we are instituting against service providers, and the asset forfeiture unit has also been pulled in to make sure that where there are findings against anyone, so that the asset forfeiture can come in.
Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, those were the proclamations. These are the proclamations that are mentioned in the annual report. We didn't cover the historical ones because those were not really flagged by the Auditor General. I will pause here and take questions, if any.
All right. No, I think that helps. I think colleagues, just first off the bat, will probably then IDT must take us through the action steps they have taken and we get that information. All right. Colleagues, I still see the team is still busy in and out, so they will continue.
Apologies. I had said that the Chief Legal will give update on the ESS, the electronic monitoring, and the Giyama civil litigation.
Chief Legal, no problem.
Good afternoon, Chair, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members. Let me just get my seating right. There's unfortunately no microphone on this side. I'll report on the two matters presently in the court, Chair, just high level. I won't repeat what the head has mentioned already. In the matter with ESS, it falls under R18 of 2016. We are seeking a declaration of invalidity. That means the setting aside of the contract, as well as just an equitable relief, that is, losses suffered, damages suffered by the department as a result of the irregular award of the tender. Just to amplify, there has been non-compliance in terms of statutory provisions, as those mentioned by Advocate Mutibi, as well as misrepresentations in terms of the submission of forged documents by the tenderer. This matter was argued in August 2019 in the High Court. We are awaiting judgment at this point in time concerning the review and the cancellation of the contract. Once that order is granted, we will then pursue any claim as a result of the losses which we have quantified. The outcome of litigation under R20-2016, also known as MSW, that concerns the Giyama as well as a renovation project. We confirmed that the irregularity there was the irregular application of Treasury Regulation 16A66, which is commonly known as the piggybacking. It was actually non-existent at the time and should not have applied. In this case, Chair, we've issued our papers. We are at an advanced stage of litigation where heads of argument has been filed, and the matter is now ready for case management, and we are awaiting a date from the Deputy Judge President in that regard. Similar relief is sought here, declaration of invalidity, as well as recovery of losses and damages suffered by the department. Then in respect of R28-2017, because that matter has not been issued, it's also known as the IDT matter. Papers will be issued this week, and then we will be able to give further in detail and information on that. But it's similar relief that's being sought as in the previous two matters referred to. Thank you, Chair.
Right. I think that is helpful. Right. Honourable Mende had a question. Honourable Liz. And then we will... Right.
Now, I just want to check on the finalized one, Advocate Mutibi. Any of those are communicated to DCS yet, or they have been sent, the report sent back to President and to DCS?
Apologies, Chair. The report on the Proclamation 44-2007, this is MUSASA, as far as I recollect, and the Commissioner can confirm, I think the report was sent to DCS. The ESS, the report has just been released to the President, and given the decision that the Presidency has taken to release the report, we expect that it will follow the same process and it should be released. We can go and follow up
so that it's released speedily to the commissioner. MSW, the report was submitted on the 8th of June 2018 already. On this one, I cannot really confirm if the commissioner has received it. We can check. If not, it will follow the same process. We'll request it from presidency to be released. But the outcomes, honorable member, the referrals on discipline and so on, those would have already been sent to the department. They didn't have, they didn't wait for the presidential report.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, so just to be absolutely clear, the Bosasa report, presidential
yes.
report, was submitted to the president in 2013.
April 2013.
Yes. So that's 6 years ago, long, long before there was a change in president and Bosasa really came to the fore as, well, started collapsing around us. So I just want to make that clear that I've got the date right, the president had it, the referrals were sent to the DCs, but the DCs failed to take any action. Is that correct? I think that's what you said. Department did not institute civil proceedings against the ones that you were referred to.
Yes, that's our information, as fed back by the department. Thanks.
And so, Mr. Chairman, may I then ask the Commissioner, have those proceedings been instituted since then?
Commissioner?
The civil proceedings, no. On the referrals with regard to officials, I responded earlier just to indicate that they had left the department.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So at that stage in the law, it didn't allow the SIU to institute civil proceedings, so it went to the DCS. The DCS failed to take any action. So where are we right now? Whose responsibility is it?
Good. Honourable Chair, honourable members, we have engaged with the department. We are really considering to ensure that action is taken. There's a legal check that we are doing with our legal department in terms of whether we will be, you know, faced with the defence of prescription. But we've asked the legal department to really check. In terms of the legislation, state liability, which may impact on whether the defense of prescription applies to the state or not. So once we finalize that, we will be in a position to respond, but we would like action to be taken. And I need to just indicate, perhaps this is just for further information, ever since the investigation was done, and in conjunction with the Zondo Commission, we've commenced with the process to issue or process a proclamation to then issue an investigation on all the Bosasa contracts across government, and that process, as I said, is underway. We are aware that Bosasa has now, you know, mutated into global operation, but there's legal processes that we'll take into account so that we hold whoever is accountable, responsible for those areas.
Thank you, Advocate Matiti. Just then, Mr. Chairman, you pointed out the difficulty with the changing commissioners and Advocate is,
yeah.
We'll deal with that, I'm sure, but in this specific case, who were the CFO and the commissioner in 2013, April 2013, when the report was published?
I think we just need to go and we can establish that if the committee gives us a few minutes. and then we can really determine who was the, I think it was the acting commissioner at that time, my information says, but we can get the name.
All right. Chairman, yeah, I'm sure we can. We've got all these staff of the, I don't think it's really the advocate's responsibility to answer that question.
Yeah.
But thank you for.
Okay. Colleagues, what we will do is this, because we will end up going in umjikelezo of sorts, not actually arriving at a point of conclusion. Can the information which was being collated outside be presented? And the, okay, Commissioner will hand over to you. Then the information that was being collated, and then we will develop a roadmap. I've got a suggestion, a colleague, on how to proceed effectively and efficiently on this matter. My difficulty with applying for an afternoon session is that there are a number of issues which need votes in the House this afternoon. So we may run into difficulty. There's a Foreign Services Bill, amongst others, which are all going to be served before the House. So I will make a proposal. Right. Commissioner, can I hand over to you? At the end of it all, Nkosi, we will hand over to you to make our concluding remarks, if you have any, and then we will we'll see how we will proceed. All right. Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to, I haven't responded to this earlier, but it was around the blacklisting of PUSASA and its directors. The correspondence was forwarded to National Treasury on the 18th of March this year.
Can I request you to use the mic? I'm told
okay.
That because we also transcribe the hearing, so they are having difficulty picking your voice up.
Okay. So the we've made a submission to National Treasury on the PUSASA matter with regard to blacklisting on the 18th of March this year. Chairperson, I've also received mail around with regard to the letters, and I'll forward it to the email.
Okay.
That I've got that you provide. With regard to vetting, just to indicate, I have not yet received the supply chain details, but from a SMS perspective, vetting is still in process from SSA, and that only 5 senior managers have vetting clearance, according to...
Out of how many?
Out of... the spreadsheet is not very useful in terms of doesn't capture the details, but I can provide that.
That's fine.
That's fair. And our... everybody... People have submitted this outstanding... We can identify the outstanding... applications, so we can identify that.
Okay.
I think, Chair, that deals. I think I'm hoping that I've covered.
All right.
The areas.
Right. Colleagues, are we good with that? The email will be provided. It's what we've been corresponding with to Gabin and Mr. Kali. They will provide you, as we have been communicating with the emails. Colleagues, I would like to make this suggestion. There is the issues of deviations, which we have not dealt with. There's commitment, and there's fruitless and wasteful expenditure. So I would suggest, colleagues, that we suspend the hearing for today and convene the completion of this hearing on the 27th. What we will do is we will push basic education so that these issues don't go cold. And we'll find a date for basic education. So that in the morning. I do know, of course, that in the evening we'll be dealing with SAA, so it's going to be a very busy day. The only problem that the other day we wanted to use has been taken by programming because we're starting at 10 on that day to finalize the budget.
but I would really hope that we finalize on this matter before we close, go to recess. The other matters we can then flag, basic education for Jan, Feb, we'll be busy with school, unless we will, between today and tomorrow, find a way to maneuver the program. I know the inconvenience that this does to us. We have a lot of work. And next week, when services will be a very taxing day, given that correctional services comes back and then SAA in the evening. But unless we find a Friday. So that's always the opportunity cost. So I just want to make that proposal, and then I will make remarks and then hand over to the Deputy Minister. All right, Honorable Somio, Honorable Mente, Honorable Liz, Honorable Hunter. Comrade Mike.
Well, Chair, I think in the first instance, I will address your proposal. But one is on the, I'm sorry for this, one is on the question of referrals for DCs.
Okay, that's fine.
It's a matter that we have been dealing with the rest of the morning. The SIU has indicated a number of instances that we engage with. They are able to assist in some of the institutions which they have done these things. Are they able to assist in this instance to follow through their own referrals? That is based on a value proposition. Looking at the matters that have been investigated right through and referred and to other areas as well. And whether the commissioner is as well prepared to welcome the assistance of the SIU in as far as the disciplinary processes are concerned, but in both ways, probably that could somewhat assist. And the second area I would want to address, I do not allow me
to finish that and then switch to the proposal.
On the issue of disciplinary referrals, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we do assist state institutions and we can assist the department in this regard. And the nature of the assistance is that we do avail our members who have investigated and they are able to go and appear and give evidence just so that the matters proceed speedily. We are unfortunately unable to either chair or present on behalf of the department, but we do make our members available to give evidence.
All
thank
right.
you.
Perfect. All right. Commissioner?
Chair, just to indicate that we're having a good working relationship and that on all the live cases, we are actually processing those cases. So there is no delay on the current cases, and I think that we can confirm.
Okay. All right. Let's
come back.
Speak to the 27.
On the area of your proposition, I think let's allow you to work out these other things, but the return of the department would be somewhat appreciated. But the areas of emphasis, I think Honorable Mente has worked out some of the areas that ought to be the matters of reference for us in terms of those specific reports, which digs deeper into what we want to know when they come back more picture prepared. But I would have loved to get into the instance of the quality, authenticity, and the repute of what we ought to receive at the time.
All right.
I'm really sitting here a bit have a problem where Umama Apa was met a very ordinary reference. That at least when we deal with these matters, we must receive a sense of respect. And that sense of respect lies into the individuals who are involved, you see, sitting with us, presenting the reports, the credence to that, and all those kinds of instances. At least they depict back to us to how would we want this parliament to be viewed in terms of handling matters that matter to communities out there. So I would want to come back to the fact that the members, the officers, they can assist the commissioner to prepare the report, and when the report comes to us in terms of the committee, the commissioner should see this committee in a way. It looks like that there's a lot that he has to somewhat deal with, inclusive to his team, one way or the other. So let's appreciate the fact that when they come back as the department, let's see the stature of the commissioner. In authority in this instance. I hope the deputy minister carries what we would want to see in the department in terms of these kinds of things going forward. So thank you, Chair.
So, Honourable Mente.
Thank you, Chair. On the matter of the 27, I think your office is capable of dealing with well. The most important thing is that we deal with this matter as soon as possible before we rise for this parliament. But in addition to what they should prepare for the next hearing is a list from the PSC, Public Service Commission. They do publish a list on every financial year of disclosure. There is a Disclosure Act framework, which all of senior officials of departments in South Africa have to disclose. It's a law. So some of these transgressions in your schedule are pertaining to non-disclosure of certain officials, and then they were found to have been dealing in business with the state. And then also the list of the vetting must not leave it. How many officials do you have collectively in the provinces as well? And how many of those are vetted? How many of those refused? How many of those are in process?
All right.
Thank you.
Honorable Liz.
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to go along with your proposal, but may I ask Commissioner, through you, Mr. Chair, that we don't have this huge delegation here.
Sure.
Again. Preparations must be made. Electronic communications can be done during the meeting if additional information is required, but for such a large delegation to come back would simply be wasteful.
Yeah. All right. Colleagues, thank you. All right, Honourable Mente, small one, Gampel.
Apollo Chair. No, the last one was what Advocate Mtibi was reporting on. All the matters referred to them, they must have a separate document of their action plan
all right.
On all the SAU matters.
Perfect. All right. Commissioner, we are going to round up. I just have one question. The code enforcement that took place insofar as the TDGs were concerned, at what level was the person presiding over that?
When I look at it, was signed by the National Commissioner.
Okay, well, that's fine. We will look at that. So we'll deal with that. Colleagues, thank you. We will facilitate that. Let me conclude by saying
Ours here is to follow the rands and cents. And we have come to the determination that that on its own is not enough. Rand, cents, and people. We look at behavior, we look at conduct, we look at compliance of the individuals in the respective spaces who are the value chain of oversight and accountability, and subsequently the information that we receive, which is the basis which we work on. And it is our expectation that if you're in any space, you are familiar 100% with the granular details of the space in which you are in. And so what has transpired today does not inspire confidence that things are being done properly. It should not be that we ever have this kind of hearing ever again. Our expectation is simply that, do the right thing all the time and every time. If you do that, these people sitting here, including myself, won't have jobs. And we are going to, I assure you, Commissioner and your team, that until things are right, we are going to be a regular appearance at SCOPA. We will most definitely, and I assure you, that we will adopt you as a key focus area. Out of the many others, but the fact that the Fifth Parliament was at pains about correctional services, and we find ourselves, for all intents and purposes, back to square one, is an indication that the moment we look away, you also look away from the things that you are supposed to be doing. And so that commitment on the part of the committee is very much alive, and it is precisely for that reason why I have been very patient, so that we can expose the grave realities confronting the department just on the elementaries and the basics of the work that should be done. So I hope that there will be that understanding that things be done correctly. And we will, of course, zoom into all the other matters that have arisen today, as the members have so been articulate. And we will finalize on the date. And so I think the 27th remains fixed, so Wednesday. On Wednesdays, we start at 9, so that we can have the full time. And considering that on that day, colleagues will have SAA, so we'll have to manage our time and day correctly. But what is not in dispute is that we are not going to allow non-accountability to be a runaway train simply because people are not doing that is expected of them. This is, at this point in time, I really hope that we're very clear with each other. And Commissioner, the issue around your DDGs and the report that has been submitted insofar as the schedule of irregular expenditure is concerned has been the trigger of the kind of disquiet, unhappiness that the committee has found itself having to engage in. Don't shortchange Parliament with the information you provide. So we will look at all of these matters and the implications, so that we can finalize on your report and make the recommendations, so that even if they are not adopted now, they are the first order of business when we come back. And if it means that we do oversight, we will do so, announced or unannounced, to the respective spaces of operation in the department. Because we are dealing with people who do not want to comply, people who are annoyed with oversight. So from our side, we will meet next week, Wednesday at 9. Colleagues, we will finalize on the issues raised today, and we will deal with commitments. We will deal with fruitless and useful expenditure and the deviations. Treasury, we will hope that you are there.
I'm sure we can excuse the SIU. They will need not be there next week. If any other matter arises, we'll let them know. AG, as our enabler, we would like you to be there. Commissioner, I'll give you a minute to make a concluding remark, and then I'll hand over to the Deputy Minister, and at which at that point we will be done. But what has happened today should never happen again. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd maybe want to reiterate that the intention at no instance was to mislead the committee. I take responsibility for the report that was tabled. But I want to thank the committee for the robust engagement because it assists us. Oversight is important, and it assists us to create correction. So I thank you, Chairperson, and Honourable Members.
Thank you very much. Honourable Deputy Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honourable Members. I think it's unfortunate that the Minister was not able to be here because the revelations that have come out here vindicate our understanding of what is happening in the department. We struggle. The kinds of questions we've been asking, they would confirm when I met them this morning, are the same questions that I was raising with them. And the initial answers that you got, which were vague and uninformative and unhelpful, were the same answers that I got. Unfortunately, I didn't get enough time to get a presentation of this report because it was ready only by Sunday for us to get it and was not able to be there, but the minister was there. That's why I'm saying it's unfortunate that the minister has not been here to listen to the questions that you've been raising, the issues that you've highlighted, and the responses, the kind of responses that you got, because I don't know whether he got the same kinds of reports when he met the team on Sunday. But as I say, we are strengthened as the ministry in terms of what we need to do, having listened to what you have to say. The level of information that we are getting as the minister, at least as the deputy minister, I don't know about the minister, is not satisfactory at all. I've asked these questions about the consequence management. What then has been done about these people who failed to conduct themselves appropriately? And you find that nothing has been done. Why? Well, you got the answers yourself because you asked those questions. So I can only say that we pledge as a ministry to work very closely with the National Commissioner and to ensure that what is necessary is done. It has been an embarrassing kind of situation I find myself in because I don't know whether I'm on their side or on your side as an MP, but I'm on their side or on this side. We take responsibility insofar as what has been happening while you are here is concerned, but as I say, we are empowered as a ministry by the interaction that has occurred here, and I'm sure my colleagues here now will be more forthcoming in terms of giving me the kind of information that we need in order for us to take the necessary action. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Deputy Minister. Well, colleagues, there you have it. We need no further confirmation. We will normalize oversight and accountability and entrench it as a daily reality. Colleagues, tomorrow we're meeting at 7 p.m. with PRASA. So in the morning, please all prepare for PRASA. There is no meeting tomorrow morning. PRASA is tomorrow night. The request was for 6, but we've been advised that there are matters which need votes. So we're meeting tomorrow evening, so 7. No meeting in the morning. The meeting stands adjourned.